This is PFW in Progress.
What are you going to do today?
Whatever I feel like I want to do. God!
PFW in Progress with Fred Kirsch.
What did you do last summer again?
I told you, I spent it with my uncle in Alaska hunting wolverines. They kept trying to attack my cousins. What the heck would you do in a situation like that?
Paul Perillo.
Are you going to eat your tots?
No.
Can I have them?
Give me some of your tots.
No, go find your own.
Come on, give me some of your tots.
No, I'm freaking starved. I didn't get to eat anything today. Freaking idiot.
And Andy.
Well, you have a sweet bike, and you're really good at hooking up with chicks.
Andy Hart.
Plus, you're like the only guy at school who has a mustache.
That's true.
Some guy named Tom.
If you need to use any of my skills, I can do whatever you want. Plus, I could be your bodyguard, too. Or like Secret Service captain or whatever.
Sweet.
And you never know, Lori might stop by.
She's the best thing that has ever happened to me. I'm 100% positive that she's my soulmate. I'm sure there's a babe out there for you too. So.
PFW in Progress.
What the heck are you guys doing? Trying to ruin my life and make me look like a friggin' idiot?
Okay, we're here at PFW in Progress. It's Tom Casale and Paul Perillo after a Patriots first round victory over the Jets. If you want to email us, it's webradio@patriots.com. If you want to give us a call, it's 508-543-7482. So, Paul, here we are. Close game for 3.5 quarters. The Roosevelt-Colvin tipped backwards pass turned to really change the momentum of that game. Even though the Jets went down and got a field goal after that to come within 7, you kind of felt there the game was, you know, well, the Jets were driving there, yeah, and you kind of felt like that was it. That was the play that was going to be the deciding factor in that game.
Yeah, we all felt it at the time, and I think ultimately it did, because it went from the Jets having the ball down 7 to the Jets having to get within 7 and then kicking off.
Yeah.
I mean, there's a big difference there. They never again had the ball within a score after that play, and I thought it was a terrific game. I don't know how you felt. I really thought that both teams played pretty well.
Yeah, I did.
Especially in a weekend that didn't feature a ton of, you know, really what I would say fundamentally sound football. The Giants game was pretty good, but not, you know, I don't think that great as compared to the Patriots. And the two on Saturday were both awful.
It's the playoffs. It's just one of those things where you have to fight for every yard. Nothing's going to be given to you. And it was one of those things where I felt like New York did a good job defensively with certain things. We were just a little bit off at times.
How long are we going?
And it's just something that hopefully, thankfully, we live for another day and we can clean up what we didn't do today. And
what is that? Gary, don't play that again when I'm here. Go ahead, Paul.
I like when he gets. I like
playoffs.
When
it's just one of those things where you have to fight.
I didn't feel on Saturday that really the teams played very well. I thought Indy played okay, but the other three teams played. I mean, the Dallas-Seattle game was a comedy of errors.
Yeah.
Which I don't even want to get into with you because
Both those teams suck. So.
And then I thought Kansas City was the most inept playoff team that I've seen in the last say 5 years.
I mean, it was almost like he was doing his buddy a favor. Here you go, Tony.
I made the joke to you. It's like they put together the game plan. They said, we're going to run Larry Johnson out. We're going to give him a whole lot of LJ. And then someone said, you know, in the back of the room, Coach, just on the off chance that they happen to stop Larry Johnson, then what are we going to do? Oh, they'll never stop Larry Johnson. We don't need a plan B. That's
right.
I mean, that's basically what they went in with. It was awful. But I thought the Patriots game was fascinating in kind of the mind games that were being played, the chess match. Both sides, you know, admitted that there was a lot of mental gymnastics going on in this game, and the Patriots' ability to handle the blitz this time around a lot better than they did the first time was key. Their ability to maintain drives, the third down conversions were overwhelming in the Patriots. I think it was 11 for 16 or something like that, mm-hmm, as opposed to 3 for 12 the last time they played. I mean, there's your ball game. You know, the Patriots get touchdowns in the red zone. The Jets get field goals. Patriots are able to convert third downs at a better rate and stay on the field. They control the clock. They win.
Right. No, the Patriots once again made the plays when they had to make them. That's why they usually win these close games. And, you know, if it's a close game in San Diego this week, you got to feel that the Patriots have the edge.
Love the Patriots in a close game.
Yeah.
I do.
So it's going to be an interesting week. San Diego, then either Baltimore or Indianapolis, if they win that game. It's going to be interesting. Although I thought for about three quarters, the Patriots and Jets were equal. I didn't think the Patriots were any better than the Jets for three quarters. I think at the end they showed their experience, they showed, you know, their playoff resolve, and that's why they won. And but the Jets, they gave them all they wanted.
And that's exactly what Bill said. And the other thing that Bill said that really stuck out to me was, we played some of our best football of the year. And I think that he's absolutely right. I think the Patriots looked great. I thought they played a terrific football game. And I kind of agree with you, Tom, in that I gained some respect for the Jets.
Yeah.
In that I know they lost by 21 points, and it sounds silly, but I agree with you. I think the game was kind of hanging there through three quarters and into the fourth. And then the Patriots did what they do better than most teams. And, you know, when you have Tom Brady, you know, it makes it a little easier. And they put him away. They put their foot on the throat, and they ended the game with 5 minutes left. But I gained a lot of respect for the Jets because they, unlike Jacksonville last year at this time, the Jets didn't come here satisfied with making the playoffs and hoping to play well or put a, you know, a good showing together. They came here expecting to win.
Right.
Now, obviously, they went home. I even gained respect for them in their post game. You know, the way Pennington talked about it, how disappointing it was. And I don't remember any of that last year with the Jags.
Although I didn't earn respect for the Jets PR staff, who told me that Pennington wasn't going to speak. And then I turn it on the next day, and I see Pennington with that backdrop behind him, thinking to myself, hey, that's Gillette Stadium. I asked the first they said he's not coming in. Then I asked the guy in the locker room, and he said, no, he's not speaking. And I leave, and then I see him talking. So I think we might have found a PR staff more inept than ours.
Oh, boy.
But it was a good game overall. We're on to San Diego. Last night we had the national championship game.
Speaking of not good games,
Florida
and not
won
well
easy. There's an emailer who's yelling at me because I went off on Urban Meyer, and he says his coaching stars clearly, you know, on the uprise, which is this guy doesn't see. Here's an emailer that doesn't know what he's talking about because he went from Bowling Green to Florida in 6 years. So he's been on the upswing for a while.
Right.
And he wants to know why I don't think, you know, he's going to be successful, blah, blah, blah. First of all, I'm not saying that Urban Meyer isn't a good coach. My point is that he's got Zook's players there right now, and he had a quarterback, which was a drop-back passer, so he was allowed to throw the ball. Now he's going to bring in his people to run his system, Tim Tebow running that quarterback draw. I believe in the SEC that's a nightmare waiting to happen. As far as winning the national championship, Lloyd Carr and Philip Fulmer won national championships. Barry Switzer won a Super Bowl. I mean, those things happen. I just think down the road with the coaching and defenses, I mean, you saw the defensive speed from Florida last night, Paul. That's the kind of defenses they have in the SEC, by the way, which Florida averaged 19 points a game on offense against SEC teams this year.
Right.
So I just think in the long haul, Meyer's offense will struggle in the SEC. But I'll give him credit last night. He let Leak throw from the pocket, which he should have been doing all year. And Ohio State, man, I think Kurt Herbstreit said it best. They showed up with ankle weights on or something.
Yeah,
they look like a high school team.
They looked decidedly slow all night. And I'm really upset with myself because I thought that Ohio State would win the game. And I said so on Sunday on a pregame show here in Boston. But all year long, and I know I've been talking about this with you, Tom, and I know that the fans are probably all upset that we're talking about college football here for 5 minutes, but all year long I've maintained that I felt the Big Ten was highly overrated this year, and I thought that people saying that it should be Ohio State and Michigan in a rematch I thought were crazy. I thought we saw that when Michigan was absolutely manhandled by USC, and we saw it again when Ohio State was absolutely manhandled by Florida. There are other conferences in the country that played a better top to bottom, a better caliber of football than the Big Ten. In my opinion, the Big Ten had two good teams in Ohio State and Michigan and one other pretty good team in Wisconsin. Beyond that, you had a bunch of also-rans in Iowa, Minnesota, Northwestern, Penn State, you name it. Those teams were also-rans.
And the bottom line is, at the end of the day, there should be a playoff because the three best teams in college football proved to be Florida, USC, and LSU. Ohio State and Michigan would have never even made it to the semifinals, probably in a playoff,
you know,
which was shown on the field.
I guess there was some talk. The BCS guys were saying that nothing will probably happen until this current deal with Fox runs out, which is 2010. You know, they had a four-year deal, I guess.
Mm-hmm.
At that time, I guess what they're talking about is the and one game. So you'd have two semifinal games and then one more.
Right.
So which case, you still would have been kind of stuck this year with, you know, who are you for?
Right, exactly.
You know what I mean? Someone's getting left out.
No,
right?
I agree. I just...
Probably USC.
Yeah.
Because USC had two losses going in. It probably would have been LSU, Michigan, Ohio State, and Florida. And I think USC might be better than them all, even though they lost two.
No,
I think USC
true.
And LSU are the best two teams I've seen.
Yeah, I agree. I think if they had a
and
playoff...
And they both lost two games, correct?
Yes, if they had a playoff system, I my guess would be those would be the two teams playing for the championship in a playoff system. But it was, you know, unfortunately, you get a game like that, Ted Ginn goes down right away. Not that it would have made, I'm just saying, you know, you get one of the stars that gets injured, and you're like, oh, you hate to see that, and then the game turns out to be a, you know, a blowout. The Notre Dame game was a blowout. The Rose Bowl was a blowout. These bowls, they're not that interesting anymore. You take away the Boise State game, what do you have?
And you know what? What was the intrigue about that game, too, Tom? Well, you finally let somebody, let an outsider
yeah, play.
That's what made that game so exciting. You know, that's the part of it that doesn't make any sense. You know, they the more they try to tinker with it to avoid problems, the more problems they get. Just have a playoff system and end it. So with that, I guess we'll close the door on college football.
Yeah, well, someone else
progress.
Coming in saying, okay. Hey, Tom, what do you think of the rinky-dink offense by Florida now? Another someone else doesn't watch college football because that's not what they did all year. That's not the offense they ran. They let Leak stay in the pocket. Like I said, it was a good move by Urban Meyer last night when he had 30 days to plan it. But that's not how they played all year. So my suggestion is watch some college football. Listen, first of all, these people only like Urban Meyer because he talks to Bill. They don't know anything about Urban
right.
Meyer.
Plus, give them all the credit in the world. They had a great game plan last night.
They had a great game plan.
And they absolutely knocked the socks off of Ohio State. The game was not even competitive.
He says the AD at Florida does not pay Urban Meyer to run a pro-style offense and teach college athletes how to make the NFL. He pays them to win, blah, blah, blah. My point was is that it's not going to work in the SEC, nor
right.
will he be a good NFL coach.
And the argument against Urban Meyer's offense this year would be that a lot of people would say that offense prevented Florida from winning games in a better fashion and almost cost themselves. They very easily could have been left out of this national championship picture because they were
exactly.
so thoroughly unimpressive in their wins.
Yeah, and if you give Steve Spurrier this team, they not only go undefeated, they go undefeated by an average margin of victory of around 30 points.
See, people look at it and they say, well, he's paid to win. But in college, it's not enough to just win. You have to win impressively. And
or you get left behind.
If not for a colossal, colossal upset of USC by UCLA in December, Florida was not in that game last night because they were not impressive enough in victory because, as Tom said, they're averaging 19 points a game against teams that have no right holding in below three touchdowns.
Yeah, this guy says it just goes to show you if it works, it doesn't matter what anyone else thinks. Well, it worked for 19 points a game in the SEC.
And it worked last
night. And they have a dominant defense with all those most of those guys going to the NFL draft this year. So let's see if it works next year. See, I'm talking about long haul. These people, they see one game. This is probably the first Florida game that Bill from Malden watched all season because he's too busy wearing his Patriots stuff and painting his face for Sunday. But I'm talking about the long haul. Let's see about the long haul because I'll still be here and I'll remember Bill and Scott and we'll see what happens. So, but I give him credit. He totally outcoached Jim Tressel last night, which was a surprise in my book. I thought Tressel had the edge there.
Oh, I give Meyer all the credit in the world last night. You had a perfect game plan and you absolutely throttled a team that most people didn't think that you could even beat, let alone beat like that.
And
so
by the way,
I give him all the credit in the world
last night.
By
the way, all you guys, you know, if you met Bill Belichick, you probably wouldn't even say hi to you. So just because Bill and Urban Meyer talk doesn't mean that you have to follow Urban Meyer's entire career.
We should probably get into some of the major news here too, Tom,
with the situation with
Scott Pioli.
Yep.
And reports in New York yesterday indicated that Pioli was set to go to New York for an interview for the soon-to-be-vacant Giants GM job. Ernie Accorsi is resigning. He's retiring, rather, I should say, and they're looking for a replacement. Well, Scott Pioli put an end to those rumors immediately by about 5 o'clock, quarter past 5 yesterday afternoon, issuing a statement saying that he was grateful from the Krafts and the Maras and the Tisch family from New York for the opportunity, but he is continuing to stay in New England. He intends to continue in his role with New England. And you have the statement in front of you, Tom, I know.
Yes.
If you want to read it verbatim, just so the fans don't miss out on any of the context.
Yeah, so Scott Pioli put out a statement. It says, I'm very honored to be granted the opportunity to discuss a potential position with the New York Giants. I have tremendous respect for the Kraft family, the Mara family, the Tisch family, and the Giants organization. After careful consideration and for personal reasons, I am continuing my current role with the New England Patriots. And that was put out yesterday by Scott Pioli.
Right. So let's put an end to that. And Scott Pioli will stay here as the Patriots GM with Bill Belichick. And a tandem that's worked very well for 7 years now. It's the second longest tandem of coach GM in football behind only Baltimore with Brian Billick and Ozzie Newsome.
Mm-hmm.
So there's some continuity there with all the different personnel changes that the Patriots, the turnover and free agent losses and stuff the Patriots have suffered in the last couple of years. This is one that evidently will go the Patriots' way, and I guess that's a good thing for Patriots fans.
Yeah, and you can see the stability there. You said Baltimore and New England. If I believe you have to have stability. I look at these teams like the Cowboys, the Dolphins, and the Raiders, teams that used to be great, the Redskins. You know, the real great franchises of the NFL, and I look at them all, the problem I see is stability. They don't have a system in place year after year. They're always looking for a new head coach. In the Cowboys' case, they have the owner as the general manager. I feel to be a successful NFL franchise, and I don't know how you feel, Paul, but you need to put a GM in place who knows the game. You need to put a head coach in place that gets along with, you know, works with the GM, knows the game, and have them run the football team. Run the business, let them run the football team.
I think you need that as long as the coach is the one with final say.
Yes. No, I agree with that.
Because if it's the other way, you end up with Pete Carroll and you have a coach with no legs.
No, I totally agree. If there's a division between the scouting and the coach feels that this guy's right, you go with the coach. I agree with that.
Now, I also want to say, last night I appeared on a TV show and kind of intimated that the end of that statement kind of left the door open for maybe if and when the Patriots are knocked out of the playoffs, maybe then things could change. I've been told that in no uncertain terms, that is not the case. This statement is what it said. Scott is planning on staying here for the long term. So I want to say that I was wrong about that speculation last night. Anybody that may have seen that, I know, Tom, you mentioned on some of the message boards that you go on that people were saying that I was saying that he was leaving, which I never said. But I just wanted to clarify that. And this is a good thing for the Patriots that, you know, Pioli will be sticking around.
And Belichick?
Will be sticking around. We've been saying that all year.
Yeah.
You know, from what people have told us about Belichick, he's under contract. He's not going anywhere.
We got a lot of different emails. I've never seen really this many different topics, Paul.
Well, that's good,
we're talking about, we got people on Herm Edwards, people yelling at me.
Well, I like those.
Yeah, we got people yelling at Shannon. But first, let's quickly, the Chargers are coming up, 14-2. Now we're going to lay some ground rules here. We don't want to hear anything about easy schedules or anything like that. The Chargers beat four teams with a winning record. The Patriots beat two. The Chargers are 14-2 in the toughest conference in the NFL. Now, if you want to write in and give us a reason why you think the Patriots will win, I think the Patriots will win. But don't tell me they have an easy schedule. Don't tell me they're overrated. Because the San Diego Chargers are a very good football team. And I think anyone that watches and understands football knows that.
And they were about a minute away from being 6-0 against those winning teams, too.
Yeah.
I mean, they easily, I'm overstating it a little bit. They easily should have beaten Baltimore.
Yeah, they dominated that
game. They dominated the game and lost on a last-second touchdown that the Ravens got. And the other game, they actually were behind and came back and tied, and Lawrence Tynes kicked a 50-some-odd-yard field goal at the buzzer to win it.
And to be honest, the Ravens' loss was
the same guy, by the way, who missed a 23-yard field goal in the playoffs.
The Ravens' loss was probably the best thing that happened to him because that ended the Marty ball. Then at that point is when he finally succumbed to the pressures and gave Cam Cameron control of the offense.
Yeah, you're right, because that game they were very conservative again. They didn't want to have Rivers, you know, quote-unquote losing them games, and they've gone away from that. They put a lot on Rivers' plate. Now, certainly, the offense starts and ends with LT. I mean, when you have a guy that's that good, it only makes sense that you put the ball in his hands the majority of the time.
Right, but we'd like to get your opinions on the game. I see Russell chimed in. He's happy that we're coming to Southern California. Let us
know.
Day
early, too, Russell.
Yeah, well, great. 6-hour flight, Russell. I can't wait. If you want to give us your thoughts on the game, if you think the Patriots are going to win, how they're going to win, I believe it's going to be a defensive game pretty much. I think in a close game in the playoffs, I like to go with the experienced quarterback, and you just don't get any more experience than Tom Brady. Now, if Phillip Rivers has a really good game, the Chargers will win, in my opinion. But I have a feeling he's going to start soaring balls over people's heads, and I see it that way. And I think the Patriots are going to come away with a win here. So let's hear what you guys think. We'll get into the emails. Now, we got some kind of emailer on email hatred
crime
going on. I don't remember exactly what's going on here. Maybe you remember, Paul. But Sawyer from Waterloo is not happy with Shannon the douchebag. He says, hey, guys, I have to listen.
Look at that douchebag.
I have to listen to your wonderful show via podcast. So I didn't hear Thursday's show until Monday. That is when I heard Shannon has his Dickens bugged by my choice to use my long-time nickname for emails instead of my given name. I do that so I can recognize my email easier. Hey, Shannon, let me make this email clearer for your feeble little brain using correct names. I agree with Thomas Casale and take the over on the over-under on Shannon being a douchebag.
Look at that douchebag.
I want to thank Andrew Hart that Shannon needs to worry about himself first. Hey, Shannon, nice visual about how Jeffrey Fisher looks like your dad. Like anybody knows or cares what your dad looks like. This guy's weird. He goes, about the game, Theodore Bruschi had a nice game. Hopefully he can step it up some more for LaDainian. Better check it. Oh, he's going by real names. I get it now. Better check, that's his real name, Tomlinson. I hope Matthew Light and the rest of the line can protect Thomas Brady from the outside linebackers, or this could be a game Thomas doesn't even get up off the turf. Maybe William Belichick's game plan will show his football genius once again. Thanks, guys. Sawyer from Waterloo, Iowa. He confused me when he was using Thomas and Andrew. I didn't understand what he meant, and then I caught on. So we have some email on email crime here.
It's a shame. It's a shame. Because we invite all opinions here. Am I right on that, Tom?
Yeah, I'm sure Shannon will retaliate at some point. James from Roanoke Rapids, North Carolina. He said, it was great to finally see the Patriots playing that well again. Brady looked like his old self, and the offense had its most balanced game of the season. Even though the defense gave up a couple of big plays and had a couple of personal foul penalties, they settled down and played well enough in the red zone that those few miscues did not end up hurting them. Oh, by the way, the 21 points they won by is the largest margin of victory the Patriots have enjoyed in the playoffs during the Brady-Belichick era. Boy, that just goes to show how weird that final score was.
Yeah, you know, that is true, Tom, because that was one of the closest, I thought, one of the most evenly played. I wouldn't say the most, but it was one of the most evenly played early round games they've had. It was far more...
What was the final?
Oh, actually, no, 28-3,
Jacksonville.
28-3, Jacksonville.
I was just thinking that. He said it's only the second in Patriots playoff. It is the only the second in Patriots playoff history to the 25-point win over Pittsburgh in the 1996 divisional round. But no, it was 28-3 last year at Jacksonville. And
I thought that game yesterday, Sunday, I should say, was far more even than that Jacksonville game last year. And I thought the Jacksonville game was a little deceptive too, but not like this.
No,
Jacksonville didn't have a chance in the second half.
The Patriots, I mean, Bill always talks about the Steelers playing well from, you know, when they're ahead. When they have the lead, he always says, you know, the Steelers play. The Patriots are no different. When they're ahead, the sacks come, the interception. I mean, we all, I think in unison, said that the Samuel interception for a touchdown was coming. We all knew it was coming.
Well, plus, even before that, the sack, because it was, after that, I said the sacks would come. They had one sack with 3 minutes left in the game. They had one sack in the game. And all of a sudden, you know, Banta Kane's flying around. And that's good football. This is not meant to be derogatory toward the Patriots. That's good football.
Right.
When you're up,
take advantage,
you step on the throat,
right,
and you end the game.
There's too many teams that let
championship
offenses
teams
go down the field.
Here's the thing. I think that was most encouraging, Tom, and I'll see how you feel about it. But you look at things, you talk about championship football, whatever you define that as, opening kick, drive down the field, touchdown.
Mm-hmm.
End of the half, 10-10, drive down the field, touchdown. You get a seven-point game, you get the ball back after the Jets kick a field goal in the fourth quarter, you drive down the field, touchdown. That's championship football, and that's what the Patriots do as well as anybody.
Right, and that's what makes them so dangerous. And it's going to be interesting this week. It's going to be interesting. What do you think about those outside pass rushers? Now, I saw the Chiefs, and I'm wondering if the Patriots will use this theory, or this strategy. The Chiefs left two guys in on each side to take away Phillips and Merriman, but the Chargers counteracted that by blitzing up the middle. And I think like in the second and third quarter they started doing that, and then they really started getting to Green. So that's going to be a tough matchup because it's hard to double-team both Merriman and Phillips. You know, that's a lot to ask. I think the
Patriots are going to have to make some big plays on offense because I don't think they're going to be able to put together a lot of drives, just like Miami.
Yeah.
I made the comment against Miami. It's tough to put together the Patriots kind of drive where, you know, you go in 12 plays because sooner or later that pressure disrupts you and gets you in a long yardage situation that you can't overcome. But on the positive side, Tom, look at some balanced offenses like Cincinnati were able to do with to San Diego.
Mm-hmm.
You know, if you can make some big plays.
Now, those were without Merriman.
That's true. This is true.
And, you know, that's you can, but I'm not dismissing your point. I think you can make some big plays.
Because I don't think their secondary is great.
No, it's not great. I don't think you're going to score 40 like a couple of teams, you know, were moving the ball with Merriman in there because you just don't have as much time to throw the football. But I do think if you can get Merriman blocked, you give Brady time in the pocket, I agree with you. You hit those, go after those cornerbacks. That's where the weakness is. Now, do the Patriots, if they can take Caldwell out, do they have the receivers to do that? I know Jabbar Gaffney had a great game, but I'm like Parcells. I'm not getting out the anointing oil quite yet. Chad Jackson, it looks like he runs what Asante Samuel ran in high school, a 5-something 40.
5-4-4. Did you read that story?
Yeah, that's amazing. But, you know, so in your...
That's Paul Perillo-like quickness, right?
In your theory, maybe Jackson has a big game in this one. Maybe, you know, they blitz, they hold them up, and Jackson can get some plays down the field. It's going to be an interesting one. If, you know, you take the plane ride out of this, and I can't wait for this game.
And you know what, Tom? Look at it that way. At least you have the extra day, so you have all day Saturday to kind of recharge your battery. This is going to be a good game to watch. This is two good teams. San Diego is a good team.
Right.
This is not one of those, well, maybe if the other team, you know, if the other team, you know, forces a couple of mistakes, this game could be, you know, perfectly played on both ends with no turnovers, and you know, either side could win.
Right.
You know, I think that San Diego is a very good team. This is going to be a good test. I'm really looking forward to it. The only thing that I hate is having to waste all this week talking about it.
Yeah. Well,
there's nothing worse to me than hype.
Yeah.
I know that sounds stupid for media guys, and we're on a radio show here, but. Doesn't matter what we say. It's not going to have any impact on the game.
No, nothing has. You know, Jim Morris said something on NFL Network I totally agree with.
By the way, a much better analyst than he ever was a coach.
He's a phenomenal analyst.
I think he's terrific.
He's great. And I keep telling you, NFL Network is the place to go. The host started to mention last year's game, and he just interrupted him, and he said, hey, let me just say right now, that what happened last year in New England has absolutely no bearing whatsoever what's going to happen this Sunday.
None.
And I totally agree.
And it wouldn't have any bearing if the Patriots had won the game,
right?
41-17 either.
Nothing.
I'm not trying to be a homer here. It wouldn't have any bearing whatsoever.
It was two totally different teams. I mean, the Chargers had a different quarterback, for Christ's sakes. I mean, it's not even close. They're two totally different teams, so...
The Patriots had a lot of personnel changes on defense.
Yeah,
so Chad
exactly.
Brown and Monty Beiser were playing that. That was before Bruschi came back, before Vrabel was playing inside.
But it's going to be interesting. LT, Gates, you know, whoo, a lot of talent. OTIS from Missouri comes in. He talks about some big plays in the game, the Daniel Graham touchdown, the Kevin Falk, which was a huge play.
The Daniel Graham touchdown was an enormous play that I don't think anybody's really talked
about. And a great throw by Brady, too. He was double covered.
Great catch, too.
And Brady said he saw the linebacker's back turn, and he threw it up there. See, to me,
when Brady said what he saw and why he threw it, then I watched the play again. To me, that's a play he makes that maybe Pennington doesn't make, and that's why the Patriots are where they are and the Jets are kind of where they are. You know what I mean? Like
the people that say that Tom Brady is the best quarterback in football, that's the kind of play I think that those people think about when they say
right.
it. Because that might be a play, Tom, and I'm not overstating this, that might be the kind of reasoning that you could say that no other quarterback in
right.
football makes, Peyton Manning included. You watch the replay on that, and they made a big deal of the play action that kind of froze the linebacker, and it did. He did take a half a step forward, but it didn't fool him to the point where it was pitch and catch.
No.
He
no.
was in decent position. And, then
and Rhodes was right
yeah.
behind. Rhodes was there, too. And
he had to throw it high to the outside, and Graham had to make a tough catch.
And, well.
And when he says that, though, like he says, like he saw the linebacker's back was turned, and then you watch it, and you see exactly what he said happen.
Yeah.
Don't right. forget, he's not going, when he's saying that, he's not going back looking at the film.
Right, he's watching
he didn't see
it
the
live.
Replay. He saw it live, and he's telling you what he saw.
Right.
And what he saw on the field is exactly what happened. I don't think every quarterback does that.
And that's what makes the Patriots so tough. Like you said, the Chargers, they're going to want to get out to a lead. Because if that game's close and that noose starts to tighten around Rivers and Marty and everything, and you got Brady and Belichick on the other sideline, that's not the position San Diego wants to be in.
Let's
they
put
want
it this
that
way.
Lead.
If it ends up in like the third quarter and it's like 10-10 or 10-7, that's not where San Diego wants to be.
We're going to Baltimore.
I mean, if it's a close game, but San Diego has scored, they've shown that they're moving the ball all day. Like what happens with the Colts, right from the outset in those playoff games with the Colts, you see this isn't going to be one of those days where it's going to be 34-31.
Yeah.
Because the Patriots
right.
have shown they're not going to let Indy march up and down the field. If they do that to San Diego, this is going to be a long day for the Chargers because they're not going to win they're not going to win 13-10.
Right.
They're going to have to win, you know, 31-24 or something like that. They're not going to win 13-10.
I
Patriots own a low-scoring game.
I agree with you, and they're going to have the same matchup the week after in Baltimore, which I guarantee will be in Baltimore because that Colts team, I want to hear Freeney and Cato June now after this week tell me how improved that defense is. We'll get to that because we got some Herm Edwards bashing coming up on the emails.
You can't get enough of that.
No, but OTIS goes on to say, in any case, the Pats' three-headed monster at the running back position, will it be enough to offset LT and keep him on the bench while the clock ticks? I do like our chances. The tough thing about playing LT is that you really can't gang up on him because he can catch balls out of the backfield so well. This is going to be a tough one. These guys are good. And if Phillip Rivers ends up converting a bunch of those third and eight plays to Antonio Gates, then we are going to be in trouble. But if we pick him off early in his first playoff game, he might just blow up after that.
Yeah, I think Tom made the point that if Rivers plays a good game, the Patriots might be in trouble. Because that might be their biggest way to avoid a good offensive performance by the Chargers would be to have Rivers be a little wild like he was a couple of times late in the year, high with some of his throws, make a mistake or two. I wouldn't expect him to go out and throw a bunch of interceptions because he hasn't really done that all year. But if he's a little inaccurate and misses chances to make some plays, then you know I think that works to the Patriots' favor.
Yeah, I just I haven't really seen has anyone like. The national guys picked anybody yet for this game?
Well, I saw like Salisbury, Adam Schefter, I heard. Everybody pretty much thinks the Patriots are going to win this game. Everybody that I've seen. And
oh, really?
Nationally. Yeah, the national guys,
well,
I think,
now,
they're all going with the Brady Belichick.
Yeah,
theory.
No, but I have to point something out here, Paul. Salisbury probably picked both teams because he's got nine teams in the Super Bowl right now.
Well, that's
now.
What he does all the time.
Every team he says, I won't be surprised if they're playing in early February.
Well,
Sean, only two teams can play in early February.
Right, and the other thing, too, is a lot of those guys, and he's not the only one that does it, but they say things like that, and they talk in terms of, you know, this team has this, this, and this, and they're really good at this, this, and that. But I wouldn't be surprised if... So basically what you came out and said, no matter what happens, you were right.
Right.
Because you're saying how good San Diego is, for example. You know, they have nine Pro Bowlers and five All-Pros. And, you know, LT, he's tough to stop. But I wouldn't be surprised with Belichick and Brady,
right.
you know, if they could put... Okay, so...
No, don't be surprised if they're playing
final
in early
score,
February.
San Diego 34, you know, New England 20. I told you.
Right, the next week
final
we'll
score,
say,
the Patriots 34, San Diego
right.
20. I told you.
Me, Fred Kirsch.
It's a Fred Kershaw. You know, it's Brian. It's, like it's a Brian Morey prediction where you cover all bases.
It's like Dickie V when it's tournament time. He'll pick like one mid-major he thinks shouldn't go, but everyone else belongs in. So by the end of the NCAA tournament, when the selection show comes, Dickie V's got 175 teams in and one mid-major that he doesn't think should be in.
There's one team that has like that 19-11 record but didn't play anybody. He says, yeah, they shouldn't go.
Greg, or no, this is Neil. Neil. This email is to Greg. Read your article in the Globe on 1907 entitled Candid Camera. So this is about the Belichick thing. This is from Neil. You need to get over yourself. You seem to imply that Bill took the camera and smashed it over the guy's head. Bill was going across the field to say good luck to the opposing coach, which he does all the time following a win or loss. The camera people were tightly packed around both coaches, impeding their progress, as many people in the press were more concerned with the post-game handshake than the actual game. Bill got annoyed, as anyone would, whose personal space has been invaded. Give the coach some space and back off. If they were being professionals and not paparazzi, it would have not been a problem, because I am pretty sure he does not make a habit of shoving people after every game. Bill has apologized and move on. So should you. I am hoping the good folks at PFW can set Greg straight, as this is a non-story. Neil McKenzie.
Does anybody know who Greg is? What we're talking
That's,
about?
That must be the person who wrote the story. Is that? I didn't read the story yet.
I haven't read any story either. But
there was one in the Globe.
I am going to say, I don't want to talk about this all that much because I don't think it's that important. I kind of agree, but it was important enough that Bill not only apologized to the photographer personally yesterday, but he went on the air and apologized publicly about the situation. So obviously Bill felt strongly enough about his actions that he felt like he did something wrong, that he not only apologized privately, but he did so publicly. So yeah. I don't think it's quite the sweep us all under the rug thing that Neil is trying to make it out to be. However, I don't think it's that big a deal either.
No, I agree with you, but to say
he
that
shouldn't have done
he
that.
Shouldn't have done that. You listen, that cameraman is doing his job.
It's not paparazzi. We're not chasing a limo down the highway.
And he was shooting Mangini. This guy didn't know Belichick was behind him. Probably
right.
He was shooting Mangini, and Bill came in and you know hit him in the face. There was no need to do that. Bill probably realized that when it was over, called him and apologized. So if that's the end of it, that's the end of it.
Yeah, I mean, I certainly would take Bill's apology at face value, and. That's the end of the story for me, and I think that's what the Globe photographer did. And the photographer in question, by the way, I do happen to know personally. I used to work with him. He was at the Herald when I was there and before he went on to the Globe. And he's not looking to make a big deal out of this either, believe me.
All right. Well, we knew it was coming, Paul. So Sean from Macon, Georgia, comes in about the Cowboys game. Hey, guys, quick reflection on the Cowboys game from Saturday night. The Cowboys had a fourth and maybe half a yard from the 1.5-yard line. There was about 1:15 left in the game. They had all three timeouts left, and the Seahawks only had one. I don't understand why Parcells didn't go for it on fourth down.
Because if you miss it, you lose.
Yeah, no, you kicked the field goal there. That was the right decision. You have to take the three there. He said they could have picked up the first down and ran the clock out or scored a touchdown. You could have also fumbled the snap. You could have got stuffed at the line. Like, I believe Tressel thought his guy could probably get a yard last night from his own 29, and it didn't happen.
There's no way.
He says you can end the game on one play. Even if you don't get it, you have the Seahawks backed up all the way, and you still have all three timeouts left. Well, that actually happened. And Sean Alexander went up the middle for about 20 yards.
You still had all three of those. Just what you said, if they happened to not get the first down, happened.
Right.
And they had all three timeouts and then backed up on the one-yard line, and they couldn't get the ball back. They got the ball back with 2 seconds from midfield. And that was after a 26-yard punt, which, by the way, how much of a choke job was that?
Yeah.
All the guy had to do was punt the ball in the play of field, and the game was over. 2 seconds, Tommy, punts it out of bounds.
I know. That was awful. He said, force them to punt and get the ball back at midfield, which they did. even if Dallas had made the kick, you have to give the ball back to Seattle with a veteran quarterback and a clutch kicker who only need a field goal to win and have a minute to do it. Yeah, I know that Dallas let Alexander have a big run on first down in the play after the Romo screw-up, but you have to think your defense can hold them. Well, that's what Parcells was thinking. We'll kick the field goal and our defense can hold them.
But they couldn't.
He says Bill might have cost the Cowboys a win. Listen,
oh, that's
Paul,
ridiculous.
You know,
you hate Parcells.
No,
and you can't
and
say
I
that.
Don't hate Parcells. I don't hate Parcells. I just think the magic he once had might not be working in today's football.
Well,
but I would. You do know if I thought that he cost the Cowboys the game, we would have let off the show with me ranting about it.
There's nothing that he did wrong. You cannot go for that and run the risk of losing the game right there on that play.
And let's be honest. If you did the same thing in that game 500 times, 499 times, the field goal at least gets kicked. I don't know if it gets blocked.
If you do it 500 times, 498 of them, you successfully kick the field goal. Once you Lawrence Tynes it off the upright, right. And once what did happen happens. Okay, so I gave it 2 out of 500, and then it's up to your defense. Now, there's no way that you can put that on Parcells. See, this is just the New England hatred of Parcells because he left. We're all jilted lovers. Every time someone leaves us, we take it personal.
Right. If you wanted to see an outrage, I would have been outraged if he went for it. You have to take the three there. It's a 19-yard field goal, puts you ahead.
I agree. And you mentioned the whole thing with the Parcells style and everything. It's not really working. I made a comment. And I think, you know what, the difference for him, he spent his whole career in the Northeast. He was in New York twice and in New England.
He's not a Dallas guy.
He's revered here.
Yeah.
He was at the Giants. They loved him. So he had that, and there's a ton of Giants fans in New England, Tom. So when he comes to the Patriots,
right,
they still love him. Then he goes back to the Jets. They love him. So they eat everything up that he says. They buy it. The media buys it. Well, he goes to Dallas. They know their football down there.
Yeah.
You know what I'm saying? They don't need Bill Parcells to teach them football. Now, I'm not saying that he's a bad coach now or that he doesn't know what he's doing or whatever, but I'm saying he doesn't have that. That resume that he has is not the same in Dallas as it was with the Jets and with the Patriots after what he did with the Giants. He could have done anything around here, and the media is going to say how great he was.
Right, exactly.
Do you know what I mean? And when the media is constantly saying how great the coach is, the players buy into that more easily. Well, he's been constantly criticized down there. Mm-hmm. I think he's not as revered down there as he was up here.
And it's just something where you hear Peter King write about how he's kind of changed since some of these deaths around him.
That was interesting, too.
He doesn't seem like the same. I mean, my mother noticed it.
Remember the Carolina game? I thought that was very atypical Bill Parcells' behavior. And I love Parcells. You know that. I argue with you all the time about it.
But you're under the assumption I don't think he's a good coach. I think he's a good coach. I'm saying right now something's missing.
I argue with you because every time something happens, every time there's like a play call that you don't agree with, you put that like that cost him a whole month's worth of games. I think you overstate the things that he does wrong. Let's put it that way. That's what we argue about. Not necessarily what we think of the guy as a coach.
I don't like when he runs the ball on 3rd and 10. That's what I don't like.
But then you extrapolate from that it cost him like 4 games because he did that.
I think it cost him that.
Not only it cost him that game, but it cost him the next one too.
No, I think Bill Parcells is a very good coach. I just think something isn't working there in that. That's why I think that he should go. And let me be totally up front here. When he goes, things will probably get worse because Jerry Jones will hire some idiot coach to run that team.
That he can push around.
To be honest, Parcells' 9 wins there is probably as good as it's going to get. Because I'll be honest with you, if you're a Cowboys fan, you got a good 20 years wait left before you win another Super
Bowl. What is wrong with that defense? Is the thing that I don't understand.
Well, this is the funny part, Paul. They're already talking about maybe Zimmer becoming the head coach if Parcells goes, and he's the defensive coordinator.
See, I don't understand what Paul. See, Parcells is a defensive guy though, and I don't understand why he hasn't been able to fix that defense. It's kind of like Tony Dungy in Indianapolis.
I don't know. It's weird. They're supposed to have talented players there. Something doesn't add up. Whether it's you can't work with Jones,
Jackson just catching a big post pattern from Chris Leak. They're showing a big highlight of Chris Leak here.
Oh, was that when Chad Jackson went to Urban Meyer and said that we need to expand our offense because what you're doing isn't working?
Yeah.
You can get the transcripts from the Combine, by the way, because Chad Jackson said that publicly, that Urban Meyer's offense was so restrictive that him and Leak actually had to approach him midseason and say, can we do some of the things we used to do because we're just not getting anywhere. That's the genius that is Urban Meyer.
Yeah, but you know what's going to happen, though, is Chad Jackson's going to peter out here in New England. He's going to be gone in 2 years, and people are going to say, yeah, see, that's because he didn't get it.
And you know what? I'm not saying Urban Meyer is a bad coach. All I'm saying is that I don't think his offensive system over the long haul will win in the SEC. And let me tell you, it didn't do him any favors when Nick Saban went to Alabama.
You know, and it might be a matter of personal choice. I don't really like gimmick offenses, Tom. I don't like when you trick teams. I like when you game plan and exploit weaknesses.
And you find
ways to move the ball in conventional manners.
And don't you think that's going to be hard to do against your Auburns, like inconsistently against your Auburns, your Georgias, your LSU, your Alabamas?
I saw South Carolina completely throttle that offense this year, and South Carolina wasn't that good. They didn't have nearly the talent. Spurrier, can we all agree that Spurrier is not a brain surgeon
right. When
it comes to X's and O's? But obviously he knows a little something about how to put together a college level anyway. He completely shut down that Florida offense. They won because the South Carolina kicker missed three field goals.
Yeah, and, you know, like I said, I'll give Urban Meyer credit. He had a great game plan last night. And
plus an extra point, by the way.
Yeah, and I don't know what they did, but to hold... You know, you got to give the defense credit, too. 84 yards offense for Ohio State.
Florida won the national title, make no mistake. They won the national title because of defense.
Yes,
not
and they did it all year because of defense.
Their defense was great.
Charlie Strong, that defensive coordinator.
And Greg Madison, co-coordinator.
Greg Madison, yep.
I talked to Greg Madison this year.
Used to be at Michigan. And I mean,
His son, by the way, is a big-time player for Iowa.
Oh, is he?
Greg Madison. He's a big-time defensive lineman.
Those guys did a tremendous job for Florida. We have another one from James from Roanoke Rapids. He said, there has been some debate on the actual benefits of having a bye. Well, you can never underestimate the value of having an extra week to rest and help and heal up your team's players. I just think it's just as big or bigger of a benefit to have that extra week to game plan and insert new formations and plays that the other teams you might face have not seen nor can game plan for. We can expect to see something like this week in San Diego. You also have more time than the teams without a bye to break down the game films of those teams and discover their strengths and weaknesses. Even an idiot with enough time to study film can find something he can use against you. Not that I'm saying that Marty is an idiot. Well, the bye is definitely big. NFL history proves
that.
We don't have to say anything.
I've said this many times on this show. I think the bye in the NFL is the most valuable thing in all sports in terms of playoffs. Most valuable thing to have. It's the most significant advantage a team can have is the bye.
I agree. And
hey, did you see this? Kirk Herbstreit's preseason top five, 2007.
Rutgers number five. Oh, the Fighting Fred Kirsch's number five. I can't believe it.
USC, LSU, Florida, Michigan, and Rutgers. I think that's hilarious.
It's Rutgers number five. Wow, the Fighting Fred Kirsch's. Okay, well,
God help Fred Kirsch if Rutgers is like a BCS team. Consistently over the next couple of years, he'll never hear the end of it.
Eric from Manchester was interested in my top five in the draft. I haven't really gotten into the draft stuff yet. You know, we're still here in the playoffs. The Raiders and the Lions. I would say it would go Russell and Calvin Johnson, one out of two. And I'm telling you right now, don't be shocked if the Lions take Calvin Johnson, because I know what's going to happen. Mike Martz is going to tell those guys, listen, you can't let what you did in the past affect what you're doing now. We don't have any receivers, and this guy's a stud.
But don't they have to take a quarterback to get the ball to those guys?
Yeah, but that's saying, I don't know, who knows if they like Brady Quinn. I don't know what they're going to do. We're talking about terrible organizations here, Paul.
Well, that's true, but I'm going on the premise that you have some new blood in that organization with Martz and Marinelli. But anyway, I think you're probably right.
But even though so, the Bucs would probably take Calvin Johnson. I mean, Galloway's getting older. They need some speed.
This is not in any way trying to say that Calvin Johnson's going to be slipping into the mid-teens the way we had, I think, an email last week suggesting.
No, there's no chance. You can hope for Ted Ginn. That's your best chance. And you can not hope for Samardzija because he stinks and you don't want to see him here.
Let's give a little plug for you guys, though. In terms of the draft, the combine will be right around the corner, right after the Super Bowl, late February. Andy Hart and Tom Casale will be in Indianapolis once again, as they were last year, and you don't want to miss the volume of information that these guys crank out on Patriots.com and again in Patriots Football Weekly. No one, and I don't say this just throwing it around, but no one covers the combine more comprehensively than Patriots Football Weekly, and I will completely wash my hands of it because I don't do it. But Tom and Andy will be there, and maybe even Brian Lowe this year, giving us some video stuff with Patriots video news. And I'm sure some of that will appear on Patriots Today as well.
This is pretty much the worst video ever made.
They're going to have profiles of guys that the Patriots are interested in, guys the Patriots aren't interested in, the best players, the sleepers, diamonds in the rough, guys you never heard of like Hank Basket last year and Oliver Hoyt. That you know, these guys made household names. Tom and Andy made household names when they came back, and sure enough, we see them in the NFL playing. So, you know, you can't get them all right, but
no,
I think that you cannot if you're interested in that draft, you cannot miss the combine coverage that will be taking place on Patriots.com in the future.
Hire you as my agent.
How's that? That was
pretty
good.
That was
a heck
of a plug.
Wasn't that a good plug?
No, it was. And yeah, we'll
I'm all about promoting team today, Gary. I got slapped around a little bit today for something, and I'm all about team now. I'm on board.
Yes, we'll talk to some players if they say the Patriots are interested or have contacted them, which means absolutely nothing, by the way. But we'll at least write about them because the Patriots talk and contact 100 people. But at least it gives you a little something that shows you the people they're interested in. We'll focus on the linebackers and the receivers, obviously, as those look to be two areas where the Patriots will, at least you would think, address in the draft. Who's this here? We got a long email.
I got you all flustered with that. Plug, right?
We got Matt from Quincy. He's got a long email about Herm Edwards. He says, I don't know if you talked about it already, but Herm Edwards is a joke. Not because the Chiefs lost in Indy. That's a tall order, and the Chiefs just aren't very good. But it's almost like Herm just listened to the talk shows all week and said, oh, I think we'll run the ball. So he's talking about Herm's terrible coaching. He also says LJ is not off the hook either because he didn't look like he ran very hard.
He didn't look very interested in playing.
No,
that
he did
game,
not.
Did he?
He says, how do you run the ball 350-plus times during the regular season and basically get the day off on Sunday? The final was when he tapped out in the 4th and 10 with about 4 minutes left in the game. Was he tired? You have to be kidding me. I know he's a horse, but on Sunday he played like a dog. He said, meanwhile, Herm wanders the sidelines, contemplating the edgy quotes he can tell the press after the game. We know LJ didn't like playing for the white guy. I hope he enjoys playing for the black guy. At least in the playoffs, he won't ask him to do that much. And that's Matt from Quincy. Well, and the funny thing is, I think somehow, and we were talking about this before you came in, Paul, Andy and I, somehow Herm keeps sneaking into the playoffs. I'm not sure how, but he gets in. But I would argue that last year's Chiefs team that didn't go to the playoffs was better than year's Chiefs team that did go.
And they had a better record. I mean, they went 10-6 last year.
But I think overall they were better.
Yeah.
And somehow they snuck in this week. And I think Denny Green, or he may be the new Denny Green. He just kind of, well, hey, we're here. We made it in. But just a horrible, horrible, not just game plan, but never going to the backup quarterback.
Everything
when
about
you needed
it.
A spark. Awful.
It was just like I said. If by some fluke Larry Johnson is not effective in this game, well, we're going to lose because that's what we do. We run Larry Johnson 416 times, and if someone stops him, we lose. That just doesn't make any sense to me. But, you know, I find it a little funny. Last week, you couldn't find anybody that thought the Colts were going to win that game. And all of a sudden, well, that was a tall order going to Indianapolis and having Kansas City win. They're not that good. Well, everybody thought Larry Johnson was going to run for 300 yards the way Jacksonville did. You know, I just find that funny now. All of a sudden, you know, the tenor of that has changed a little bit.
I don't think that they
I didn't think the Chiefs had a chance to win that game, by the way. Not even a chance.
I don't think that they should have went away from the run. I just thought maybe like Pittsburgh did, they would open up a little bit passing to kind of get those guys off the line because I thought Gonzalez and Kinnison could do some things. But
when you have something that you do exceptionally well, and I'll be looking for San Diego to do the same thing this week,
by the way.
Right,
exactly.
Come out and throw the football a little bit early.
No,
throw it on early downs and throw it early in the game and then get to Tomlinson. You got to figure that Indianapolis was going to come into that game all jacked up to do whatever it could to stop the run. And I don't care how bad you are at something. If you go out there and you say, 11 guys, one thing we got to worry about here, we have to stop the run, I'm sorry, but you're going to be able to at least contain it.
And what we said last year after that Pittsburgh game was that if we knew Cowher was going to come out and be aggressive, we would have given the Steelers more of a chance because we all liked the Colts big in that game.
I was waiting for them to go out and try to pound the
ball. Right, we thought they were going to play conservative, and he did just the opposite. And they only scored 21 points, but they were able to move the ball enough early on in the game to get the Colts kind of out of their defense. And it was just And it wasn't just like the – it was kind of like the coaching staff and players gave up like after two series. Didn't you feel that way watching the game? Like
the even game they was thought, over. That's
even
why
they thought they didn't have a chance?
I got in a little argument with Andy in the press box, you know, during the Patriots game when he was saying that they had a – you know, they did this and they did that and they had a chance. And I said, the game was over. That game was, you know, it was 6-0, but it might as well have been 106-0. The game was over. Kansas City, it was apparent. It was painfully apparent after the second three and out. They weren't moving the ball that day.
Right. The only chance they had to score was if Ty Law made it into the end zone.
Turnovers. That was the only chance. And when it didn't happen, they were dead.
All right. Well, we have Steve chiming in here. He said, hi, PFW gang. Nice win for the Pats this week. Always good to get a win in the playoffs, even if it was expected. Next stop, San Diego. I have two questions. I thought I'd run by you guys, see what you think. Jabbar Gaffney, great game for this guy. Do you guys think this is Gaffney beginning to emerge as a credible receiver, or was this simply a product of the Pats' game plan for the Jets? Do you think we'll see more of Gaffney next week in San Diego? I'm going to go
game plan. I
think
it's a product of the game plan for the Jets.
Yeah, I think he is what he is. They found something. They took advantage of it. And this week he might catch one pass.
And that won't necessarily be his fault.
No.
It might be game plan for this week.
They might see something with Caldwell they like and go to him more. He said, Jeremy Green, ESPN's first and 15, called the Belichick hug after the game Bush League. Belichick wouldn't even shake his hand when they lost, but when we beat them up, he gives Mangini a hug. Do you guys agree with this, or do you think the hug was meant to end the Belichick-Mangini controversy, or is it something else? I know this is really speculative, although I bet Fred is all over it, but just curious what you guys thought.
I thought that it was kind of an admission on Bill's part that maybe he hadn't handled the first couple of games and the whole leading up to it, not saying his name, blah, 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 all that. I don't think Bill felt like he handled that well.
Right.
Now, I haven't talked to Bill about it. I'm just giving you my opinion. I think that Bill's actions during the week, he was very complimentary to Mangini leading up to the playoff game. He referred to the wonderful job that Eric and his staff have done to get the Jets here. I thought he was acting about Mangini the way he does every other coach, and I think that was a departure from what he did the first two times. Wouldn't you agree, Tom?
Oh, yeah.
I think it was kind of an admission on Bill's part that I didn't really handle it really well the first couple of times. I may not still have a warm and fuzzy feelings for Eric, but I'm going to be professional about it, and I think that's why he hugged him, not because he was trying to be Bush League about it. I think he just realizes that it's stupid to try to, you know, make a big deal out of this. It's only going to perpetuate it.
And I think that he wanted it ended, too. Like,
yes.
He doesn't like questions that he doesn't like to answer, so he figured if I hug him, we'll get rid of all this. I mean, like you said, he might still hate him. But I'll give him the hug, you know, we'll put this behind us. That way, the next time we play the Jets, I don't have to hear about the handshake. I don't have to hear about not mentioning his name.
Right.
And I think you're probably right. He mishandled the situation. He realized it, and he said, let's put an end to this because all it is an outside distraction for my team. And he did. Now it's over, so we don't have to wait for a handshake anymore. They're brothers, so they're going to hug. PJ, our paisano, who I was off last week, but I've forgiven now. He says, hey, guys, great win for the Pats on Sunday. I told you last week that I would rather have the Chargers if we won. Well, be careful what you wish for, I guess. This is going to be a tough game. I am hoping that the Pats can hold LT in check, 90 yards and one TD, and Phillip Rivers folds under the playoff pressure. Well, first, PJ, I should tell you, which I found out last week, that Phillip only has one L, not two, as I wrote in all my stories as well. I also hope that the Chargers come out a little bit rusty after the week off and the Pats can take an early lead. That is the key for the Patriots. Keep the Chargers rush at a minimum by running Maroney, Dillon, and Falk. If we get down too far, then watch out as Brady will get pounded. Brady showed on Sunday how great he is by making Jabbar Gaffney look like a top-notch receiver. Just watching him jog onto the field makes me confident that we have a shot to beat whoever we are playing. Great show, guys. I'm glad to hear you're on for another week. P.S., what is the schedule for PFW in progress if the Pats lose? Will there be a wrap-up show at least next week?
To answer the last question first, we'll be on every Wednesday from noon to 2 p.m. Eastern time. That's our off-season schedule. So it won't be a wrap-up show per se. We'll just regular off-season is every Wednesday. And all of us will be, for the most part, all four of us would be part of that show. So, otherwise, Tom, I really agree with
pretty much everything PJ said.
I think that controlling LT, I think, probably does mean – you know, somewhere between 75, 85, 95. You know, I don't see you really giving a 13 for 30. Like Larry Johnson.
Probably not, no.
Now, the only way I think that he gets held to a ridiculously low amount of yards is if the Patriots jump way out in front.
Right, and they have to throw the football.
And they can't run the ball. I mean, if he gets 15 carries, I don't see any way he doesn't get 85 yards. Do you?
No. I imagine he'll get close to 100 yards either way. If you look at that Baltimore game early in the year,
100 yards in that
they had 98 anyway. Yards in that game. And, I mean, they played as good a rush defense against them as you possibly could, because even though Cam Cameron's more open with the offense, he's not going to run LT 10 times. He knows what the bread and butter of that offense is, and he's going to get his touches. But like you said, if the Patriots go way out ahead,
and
that
I think it
one.
Is important to get a lead
yes.
for the Patriots. As Tom made the comment earlier, the Patriots play very well with the lead, but I think that's particularly important this week. Wow, Boise State got a first-place vote in the AP poll.
They finished fifth
yeah.
for Boise State. That's good.
But I think that getting the lead is of paramount importance for the Patriots. That would let them dictate the way the game is played. If they fall behind, I agree. I think Brady's going to be in for a long
it's
day
over.
with that rush.
If you let Merriman pin his ears back and come after you, like
you eliminate Maroney and Dillon as possibilities,
yep.
then that's
it's all
that's
over.
Tough.
It's going to have the same thing. Is going to be
just like the Patriots
Miami
do,
right?
You know, the Patriots thing. when they get you one dimensional, all of a sudden their pass rush becomes much more dangerous.
Yeah, it'll be a good game. I mean, I got to say though, I love that Merriman. I love
because you love all the steroids.
No,
freaks.
I love guys who take steroids and are mean.
and show up on national TV with tank tops.
I just like mean looking mean.
Yeah,
mean
did you
guys.
See that interview?
I mean, that's a mean.
That makes
dude
a lot
right
of
there.
Sense, huh? You get suspended for 4 games for violating the substance abuse policy, and you show up with no sleeves.
Well,
his advisor is Andy Hart.
Well, and I think that he's so crazy.
Like Nomar on the cover of Sports Illustrated.
He's so crazy and juiced up that he just doesn't care. He's saying, here I am.
He's the Denny Green of linebackers?
I'm going to kill you, and I don't care what you think. Russell from the OC, early Deuce set, big game, big win for LSU, who finished, I believe, was it third or fourth? I just saw. I think it was third. Third in the final voting. I'm sure by the time you get to this email, we have already discussed what a horrendous job of coaching Herm Edwards did against the Colts. With 10 guys standing in a box on the first play, you would think he would have audible to a pass. Maybe he was too far away to see all the blue jerseys waiting for Mr. Johnson. Solid game for the Pats. Good to see them slam people to the ground to make sure they were down. Of course, when that happens, laundry flies, but it's worth it. And watching the other games, and I'm only using this as a point of reference, not really a comparison per se, but it seems that the Pats' O-line doesn't run block well. Any yards the backs get seem to come from their power or elusiveness. Not a lot of holes like I saw for Westbrook, Barber, and a couple of the Dallas runners. Lastly, I want to say again, they have to re-sign Samuel. Unless they plan on shelling out the cash for Clements, they have no alternative. Just pay him. Enough with this, he's an elite corner and all that. What is the alternative? The kid has been solid since day one, and he knows the defensive system. Champ Bailey isn't going to walk through that door. And if he does, he'll be wearing a Broncos shirt. So I vote to sign Samuel. Not that it matters. Great show as always, guys. Russell from the Hot Chick Rich OC.
Yeah, you know, the Samuel thing is going to get interesting. He was, that's probably another bit of news that
yeah,
maybe
the,
some of our
story.
Listeners haven't heard. He was an extensive feature story in the Boston Globe on Sunday, game day. He was quoted as saying that there was an offer made that wasn't even worth discussing. It was so low. And one of the things that he lamented was that during negotiations, he doesn't like the fact the Patriots bring up so much negative, they make it so negative,
mm-hmm.
and they belittle you, is the way I think he put it. And certainly setting up to be a pretty contentious negotiation. Now, I agree. I don't think that Asante Samuel was a great player, but I do think he's a good one.
Mm-hmm.
And I think at some point, you got to try to keep some of your younger guys. You know, Branch
yeah.
is gone, Givens is gone, nothing we could do about that. Now, this is another one that's in the prime. You know, I think they need to keep some of these guys.
Andy and I were arguing before he got up to the press box on Sunday. You know, he was arguing that he doesn't think the Patriots will go away from their system, which they probably won't. But my argument was, you got the defensive line, you know, that young defensive line. You got, you know, you're going to get them intact.
you get one good corner like Samuel, who's good in your system, now you can kind of mix and match that other corner. You know what I mean? You don't have to, the Patriots don't need two shutdown corners. But if you keep Samuel, you got a good player who's getting better every year, who's understanding right. your system, who's playing well. I just think this is the kind of guy that if you don't sign him, you're not only sending a bad message to the fans, you're sending more bad messages to the players. Like, what do I need to do to stay here? Be Tom Brady or Richard Seymour or take less money like Teddy Bruschi? Because to me, that's the only way you stay.
Yeah, no, I mean, I know that's what people, you know, and I've espoused those theories in the past, too, and it just doesn't seem to ever really come to fruition. I think that Bill does such a good job of turning the roster over that there's not a lot of people that could be in that disgruntled category. They're not around long enough to really get disgruntled right. about it, and I think that's what they do well. But I just look at it as, at some point, you gotta keep somebody. And I'm not advocating going out and giving this guy a $15 million signing bonus or something like that. You can't let him blow it out of the water in terms of your salary structure, but there's more money available now. Market value is higher now. So, you know, the whole, that's not market value, you know, that they're paying, that they're overpaying, blah, blah, blah. At some point, you gotta do something to, you know.
Yeah, you gotta compete with the market.
Yeah, I mean, you gotta step up a little bit. I think Samuel's a guy, I agree with most of the emailers. I think Samuel's a guy that's had a great year. I don't think he's a great player, but I think he's had a great year. And I think they might need to hold on to him. Not at all costs, but they're going to have to do something to rise up at least and meet him halfway.
Yeah, I agree. Okay, we'll take one more before going to a break. It's Alti from Montreal, Canada. He says, I'm so happy to see that Scott Pioli has chosen to remain with the team, which also leads me to believe that the Pats have already re-signed Belichick and will announce it at the end of the season. Deion Sanders claims that Rodney Harrison is going to play. Do you have any info to support this? I don't have any info to support it.
No, we don't have any info to support it. Bill was quoted as saying, we'll see, we'll update going forward, but no, we don't have any info like that at all.
I'm sure he wants to play. It's his old team, and he'll do everything he can, so hopefully he'll be in there. He says, as for this week's game, I think they are going to have to play it with the idea of being an Indianapolis shootout. This team will need to get points fast and often to have a chance at beating the Chargers. They can't let the Bolts get ahead of them early, or Merriman is going to run free on Brady all day. Off topic, does Pioli get Super Bowl rings? Thanks, you guys are great. Yes.
Does he earn? I mean, if he's here, of course he does. Yeah. Yes. Yes.
I mean, Paul Perillo's got a Super Bowl ring, for Christ's sake.
He does.
I have two of them, by the way.
Two Super Bowl rings for Paul. Okay, so we will go to break, and we'll be back shortly.
Well, it's that time of year again when Sunday means you're doing something football. Whether it's tailgating in the parking lot, throwing the pigskin around, or just hanging in and watching the game on the tube, it's all about football. And when you're not watching football or playing football, well, I think we both know you're thinking football. And all that can make you a little hungry. That's why there's the tasty new snack wrap from McDonald's. It's a premium chicken select with lettuce, cheddar jack cheese, and ranch sauce, all wrapped in a warm flour tortilla. Delicious and easy to eat. It's the perfect game time snack. So grab one today. And when you do, if you're looking at that chicken select, and it kind of reminds you of a quarterback in the middle of the pocket, except now he's surrounded by cheddar jack cheese, ranch sauce, and lettuce, well, maybe you're thinking just a little too much about football. McDonald's. I'm loving it.
Hey, sweetie. When I picked up the dry cleaning today, I put 43 cents into our savings.
I'll alert the media.
Introducing Keep the Change from Bank of America.
And at lunch, I put away 61 cents.
Really? That much?
Each time you buy something with your Bank of America Visa check card, we round up the amount to the next dollar and transfer your change from your checking to your savings account.
I checked online, and so far we've saved
$2.25. Wow. A whole $2.25.
Try $225.
Oh.
Plus, we'll match 100% of your Keep the Change savings for the first 3 months and continue matching 5% up to $250 a year.
I'm back from the store. Just saved 8 cents.
I'll alert the media.
Open a checking account and keep the change. Only at Bank of America. Higher standards. Match paid annually after anniversary of enrollment. Savings accounts include regular savings with annual percentage yield of 0.5%. Member FDIC. Patent pending.
How are you? Please, sit down. What's the reason for your visit?
Well, Doctor, I need to ask you about something that I've been feeling lately.
Go on.
Doctor, you see, Every time I drink Pepsi, I start hearing this. It's here in my head, and it seems like it's coming from inside of me. And then I start feeling an urge to dance and jump, and a strong sensation of happiness fills my whole body.
What else?
You know, I take a sip, and suddenly, my hips start shaking, my feet start sliding, and it happens when I'm with my friends, at school, out in the street, at my granny's house, even when I'm at the movies. It happens everywhere. Tell me, what is it? What is going on?
Well, I know what your problem is.
Yes?
You're out of tune. The song goes like this.
Pepsi, it's the cola.
From a first-round draft pick in 2004 to owning the longest touchdown reception in Patriots playoff history, Benjamin Watson has become a standout for the three-time Super Bowl champs.
One of the best I've ever seen.
Now you can get an official mini replica helmet exclusively from the New England Patriots signed by Benjamin Watson free. This authentic mini helmet comes complete with a chin strap, receiver face mask, and Ben Watson's autograph. All you need to do is make qualifying transactions on your Bank of America Patriots Extra Points Visa card. Plus, with your card, you'll earn Patriots Extra Points redeemable for once-in-a-lifetime Patriots experiences, tickets, and much more. Don't wait. Apply at PatriotsExtraPoints.com or call 1-800-NFL-9929 to get your Patriots Extra Points Visa card and a free official mini replica helmet autographed by Benjamin Watson. Patriots Extra Points, because fans want contact too. Autographed mini helmet limited to the first 400 with qualifying purchase. See details at PatriotsExtraPoints.com.
When you got a lineman-size hunger and want the awesome, authentic taste of Gillette Stadium at your tailgate or right at home, tackle that appetite with Patriots Gridiron Grillers. Try Sack Attack sausages, first down franks, or Patriots brats in a wide variety of flavors at home, at the stadium, or at the game. And get your crowd cheering for Gridiron Grillers. They're great on the grill. Gridiron Grillers are all you'll need for the perfect tailgate or home barbecue. Check out all of the Patriots Gridiron Grillers. Mild and hot Sack Attack sausages, Patriots cheese brats and beer brats, first down franks, and more. With Patriots Gridiron Grillers, you don't have to wait for the game for that great stadium taste. Gridiron Grillers are available at Agar and CNS Wholesalers, Big Y, Demoulas Market Basket, Hannaford, Johnny's Food Master, Roach Brothers Sudbury Farms, Shaw's, Stop and Shop, and at your local supermarket. Patriots Gridiron Grillers, when you just can't wait for Sunday.
San Diego.
Okay, we are back. PFW in progress with Tom Casale and Paul Perillo. Hey, Paul, you know, I was just thinking of something when I was in the can. Now, I made my comments about Urban Meyer when he was already in the national championship game. Now, if Ohio State had won by 7 or 10 points, what would have been the difference? You know what I mean? Like, I still wouldn't have been right or wrong because I was saying something down the line. So the result of last night's game is pretty much irrelevant. Wouldn't you agree? I mean, it's not like I made these comments a year ago. I said them last week. He already was in the national championship game. That's a pretty good job.
I agree with you.
I mean, I also
happen to agree with your whole rant on Urban Meyer. I think that he is a good football coach.
Yes.
I think he's an innovative guy. The whole spread option attack, I mean, he runs that as well as anybody. I mean, it's his offense, basically.
And my biggest point was is that I don't think he's going to be an NFL coach. I don't think he's a guy that's going to come in here and run an NFL team well. Now, maybe I'm wrong, but that's just my opinion on it. So I'm sure he'll, you know, a couple more years and he's going to get a shot, so we'll be able to see. We got a couple of questions here about the fullback from Rutgers that I was talking about. Now
we can't get off the draft talk, huh?
The people are already on the draft. You got to wonder.
We have the biggest game of the year coming up.
He said, "Well, we got Bob from Berlin said he really likes the fullback from Rutgers." Now I don't know if these are jokes on me because I've already said that I believe that the Patriots draft board right now already has second round Brian Leonard, fullback from Rutgers. I think that it's done. I think he's coming here. He's one of those guys that's a hard worker. And someone else had something that I can't find now.
about how he plays. He says that he saw some video on him, and he jumps over people. He looks like a Belichick kind of player. Just for to let you know, Mike Mayock, who I think has done a phenomenal job the last 2 years with his projections and stuff, thinks that he's a second-round pick.
Despite putting Reggie McNeil as his number one overall
prospect? That was Chavis.
Oh, was it?
That was Corey Chavis, yeah.
Oh, I thought that was Mayock.
No, that was Corey Chavis, who up until that point was pretty impressive himself, but that really hurt his credibility. But he says he's going to be a second-round pick, and, you know, hey, we'll see if he winds up in New England. Okay, Tom from Nottingham chimes in. He says, great performance on Sunday. As soon as the Pats took the lead, it never felt the Jets were going to win, even when they were up 10-7. A good mix of running and passing. Dylan Maroney had strong games. Maroney got 8 more carries than Dylan. This is a positive sign for the future. Gaffney had a good game and seemed to be Tom's go-to guy at the start. Great play by Colvin that was followed up by Vince running 31 yards. Overall, a good, strong performance going into it. Should be a very tough game against San Diego. And as we said, you know, we felt that they did play very well.
I thought the Patriots played very, very well. I thought the Jets played pretty well, too. I would disagree that, you know, the game was over.
Yeah, I would, too.
You know, as soon as they scored. I mean, the Jets, I think you're deceiving yourself if you think that, you know, you weren't necessarily concerned after the Jets had taken the lead. I mean, the way you look at it from the Patriots, first of all, I don't know how you felt, Tom, but I felt like the Patriots were getting to the point late in the third quarter there where they were getting a little antsy.
Yeah. You could tell the pressure was starting to.
Because I think that they felt they were playing pretty well and they couldn't put them away. And I think that was kind of weighing on them. Now, the biggest play of the game is that lateral. Because even if, let's just say the Jets go down and kick a field goal there to get within 4. You know, and they were at midfield. It would only take another couple of first downs to do that. And they were moving the ball all day. They had as many yards as the Patriots.
Yeah.
And they didn't get any cheap yards. This was not a, oh, by the way, yardage put up. Because the oh, by the way stuff happened for the Patriots at the end of the game.
Mm-hmm.
You know, that they got the sacks. That's negative yardage. Sacks and turnovers and stuff. They didn't pile up any yards at the end of the game when the outcome was determined. The Patriots I thought the Patriots played very well, and I thought they had to play very well to win the game. Because if they didn't have as good a game, I think they may have gotten beaten.
Yeah, and all that talk about the Jeff soft schedule and Mangini being overrated, you're going to have to put that to bed. That was a well-coached team that came in here ready to play. As Paul pointed out, they came in here to win. They weren't happy to be here, which we thought could have been a problem for them. And, you know, they gave it a run for as long as they could. They just at the end.
They got beat by a better team.
They got beat by a better team. There's no shame in that. Watch out. $28 million under the cap. It'll be interesting. Very interesting what they do this offseason.
And you know what? They had a pretty solid draft. If you put together a couple of those and you make a couple of, you know, quality free agent signings and keep your cap situation, and I know that he's going to do everything exactly the way Bill did, because that's, I mean, it's
yeah,
clear. I mean, the blueprint is clear. He's doing what Bill did. So he learned from a very wise man in terms of putting together an organization, and he's proven to be very wise himself for absorbing and understanding what he was having done under him, you know, and watching while he was under Bill. So I think at the very least, you got a rivalry now. You have a division race that maybe next year, it won't be every single person saying, it's the Patriots division. And, you know, maybe the Jets will be a legitimate contender. Who knows?
Right. We'll have to see how that goes. See what they do with the quarterback position.
You know, maybe they completely take 3 steps backwards and they totally overachieve this year. Who knows?
That could happen. I was going to say, the way that might happen is if he doesn't think Pennington's the man. Like, maybe they go to a younger quarterback. You know what I mean? Apparently there's some question of whether or not Pennington will be the quarterback next year there. So we'll have to see how that works. Obviously, if you go to a younger quarterback, you're saying we're setting up for a year or two down the road and not right now. If they stick with Pennington, maybe they compete.
Right.
Dave from Rocky Hill. Do the Patriots have any distinct advantages over this powerful Chargers team besides head coaching? I'm really not optimistic about this game because I think the Patriots will get clobbered in San Diego. Are there any players in particular you guys think need to step up? If Paul wants to name the 5 offensive linemen, that would be a good start because they need to play their best game of the year by far.
And you know what, Tom? I think they might be coming off their best game of the year, too.
Yeah.
That they played very well against the Jets.
They picked up the blitzes.
Yeah. So, Yeah, I mean, I agree with Tom. I think the offensive line would be a good place to start. But edges they have, I think they might even have a – I think they might have a – they have a better defense. Now, it's not the same kind of defense. But I think they have a better overall defense, and they're certainly tougher in the red zone. There's a huge difference there. The Patriots are second in the league in the red zone, and in San Diego, I want to say, is 29th. So there's a big edge there.
And the Chargers first in red zone offense? I know they're up there. I'm not sure.
They might be up there, yeah.
Obviously, they got guys got 31 touchdowns by himself. They're going to be up there in red zone offense.
So, I mean, you know, and obviously quarterback, which we both jumped in on during the email. There's some edges, I think, for the Patriots. I think San Diego's a talented team. You're not going to hear me talking about how overrated they are all week the way that a lot of Patriots fans probably will be. I'm not going to be falling into that trap.
And even if they lose, they're not overrated.
No, they're a good team.
As I wrote and asked PFW Paul, the guy who wrote in saying San Diego this, San Diego that, I said, so by your theory, if the Patriots beat them, then I shouldn't be all that impressed because you're telling me the Chargers are no good anyway. So that means either the Colts or the Ravens are going to kill them.
And conversely, if the Patriots lose, you should be really disgusted for losing to such a bad team.
Exactly. Two good teams on the field Sunday. It should be a good game.
Two excellent teams. Two of the best four teams in football, in my opinion.
That's what I said in the SPFW. You're getting two of the best four teams on the field with the winner having a very good chance of winning the Super Bowl.
This is it. This is perfect. I mean, God bless the NFL, Tom, because you got 1, 2, 3, and 4 mm-hmm. in both conferences. You know, I'll dismiss the minor leagues. 1, 2, 3, and 4 in the AFC. This is what Roger Goodell dreamed of.
Right.
You know, as you're coming down the stretch, let's have everybody get there. Let's see who the best team is. And this is perfect.
And
this
as we
is
said,
great
as
stuff.
We've been saying all year, the Steelers of last year, that doesn't happen very often.
By
this
the
is
way,
what you
party
see.
In Andy Hart's room on Saturday, since we're going to be there early. We'll get some stuff, some beers, some wings. We'll watch the games. You can have your laptop open, getting ready to write the preview.
Yeah, I was going to say, you guys party it up, and I'll sit there and write
the
preview.
You don't enjoy the stuff with us anyway. You'll have a water and a Cobb salad.
I got to tell all the Patriots fans, that preview's already going to be done, my friends.
We were going to go drink.
Baltimore
rolls. To get drunk.
Baltimore rolls.
Maybe I just drink to get drunk.
Liam says, I read recently that the Ravens are considering franchising Adalius Thomas, and if they do, they have to decide what position to franchise him at, defensive end or linebacker. Well, he's listed as a linebacker on their depth chart. So I've got the perfect solution for the Asante Samuel issue. Declare him a punter and go to the franchise city. I'm kidding, but seriously, what's the deal there? Do they get to choose a linebacker? Will make less money. Well, on the depth chart, he is a linebacker, so that's what they list him as.
But
so that's...
in all seriousness, he plays a number of different spots.
Yes.
And that's what they're talking about. Now, I would think that he would be a linebacker.
I would, too. That's probably what he'll go for. And he's the one that also says, also, my boy Tout better be right about Brian Leonard. I saw some clips, and this kid indeed looks like a Bill Belichick kind of player. But I have to think that Belichick would be trying to break him just like Chad Jackson, the first time he tried that Leonard leap gimmick in a game. For those of you that haven't seen Brian Leonard play, you know the Moose used to do that thing where he tried to jump in the air when they went low, but the Moose couldn't jump. Leonard actually does have some athletic ability, so he actually has jumped over some people.
I mean, the Jermaine Wiggins,
yes, but a little bit higher in the air. Donaldo, in this week's Ask PFW, you mentioned that Chad Jackson's game speed doesn't match his track speed out of pads. I agree, but that's not the reason he's not getting separation on fly routes. He's not making any moves or fakes in the first 5 to 10 yards of the pattern to get that separation. Even the best or fastest wideouts just don't run down the field. The defensive backs are fast, too. You have to get them to bite on a post or out and then head up the field a few steps on the guy. Otherwise, it's going to be a jump ball situation like we saw with Jackson. Brian Daboll needs to teach this guy how to fake somebody out coming off the line. I agree with that. I'm just saying when he runs down the field, I don't think he's fast.
Well, I agree with you that I don't think that he is. When he's running stride for stride with defensive backs, he doesn't look fast to me. But just as a point of clarification, I understand that this is a little semantics here, but if it's a fly route, you run straight down the field. If you're faking it in, then that's a double move. That's a different route.
Right.
There are different things that you're asked to do. I mean, maybe the suggestion might be a good one. Maybe why not ask him to do a couple of different things? It doesn't seem like straight fly routes, straight go routes are working for him because he hasn't really been open on them. Maybe that's a good suggestion. Let's have him do something else and see if we can free him up. But I don't think that if you're asking a receiver to run a go route, he's not faking 10 yards down the field in. He's running straight down the field.
Yeah.
That's what a go route is.
And he's supposed to beat his man.
Yes.
And I wrote in the PFW, Paul, I said, if you put Hobbs and Jackson on a track, Jackson probably wins. But in pads, Ellis Hobbs looks much faster to me than Chad Jackson.
You know, part of that, too, though, and I totally agree, but, you know, Hobbs is a little guy. Sometimes little guys look like they're going a lot faster than taller guys do.
But
Hobbs, I'll tell you, lately especially, looks like he's flying.
Let me tell you something. On those kick returns? Right. Ooh. He does look like he's flying. And let me tell you something. The fastest football player I've seen since Deion is Ted Ginn Jr. Now, you saw last night. That speed. That's when he broke that first line, I said, touchdown.
He's gone.
It's gone.
I looked at Beth. I said, do you believe he just this is while he's on the 30-yard line. I go, you believe he just ran the opening kick of the BCS championship back?
Now, I want. Do you know what Ted Ginn Jr. runs in the 40? He runs a 4.32. Chad Jackson ran a 4.37. Now, if you think those two guys are anywhere near the same football speed, you're nuts, because it's not even close. So that's something, like I wrote in the thing, I'm not ready to give up on Chad Jackson. My only concern with him is that I don't know if his football speed translates from his track speed, and that's something to keep an eye on. This is Jeff. He said, judging by this poll, and he gives a link, it seems like nobody is giving the Pats a chance to win. Does this help not being the favored team? Who would you rather face if we go to the AFC Championship game, the Colts or the Ravens?
Colts.
Well, it's the Colts by a mile.
Can you click on that poll?
Yeah. Let me see here. What we got going? It's Sports Nation. Oh, it must be the fans.
Oh,
which
okay.
team? It says which team will win this game in Sunday. 53% say Chargers in a blowout. That's just the fans.
Those are fans. Who cares?
Nobody cares about them.
Because, I mean, I just was surprised because most of the national guys that I've seen have all liked the Patriots. It's almost universal. You know, and they were talking Mark Schlereth and Sean Salisbury and those guys on ESPN with their little roundtables, Mike Golick. They all like the Patriots.
Question number four on that poll. Which player would you rather have in the playoffs, Tomlinson or Brady? 71.7% said Tomlinson.
Well, so that poll doesn't mean anything. That's all.
That's idiot fans, but that's a great question, though. I think that's a great question.
Yeah, I'd rather have Brady.
Oh, I would, too, because Tomlinson's never done it in the playoffs.
Right. But I just
plus, I think a quarterback is far more important.
I was going to say, if you have a Joe Montana-type quarterback, that guy can lead a less talented team a lot further than a running back where you can stack. Like against the Chargers, have
if
a
you don't have other elements of the offense, in other words, if Antonio Gates and Vincent Jackson and Keenan McCardle and those guys don't do anything, LT's not going to be able to win it.
Right.
Here's question nine. Which coach will do a better job of preparing his team for the opponent? Want to take a guess?
If that's not Belichick, then that's ridiculous.
65% Schottenheimer.
Yeah. See, now that's just silliness.
You know what probably happened with that poll? They put it up late last night, and probably people in San Diego were still awake watching the championship game, and everyone in the East was sleeping.
That's just ridiculous. But, again, we're talking fans here.
We're not talking experts like us.
We're not talking about idiots like us that don't know what we're talking about.
Sean McLaughlin coming in. If you want to write us, it's a web radio at patriots.com. Call us at 508-543-7482. He said, Tom, the Chargers had an easy schedule and are so overrated. No, I'm kidding. He said, I think if you ask most knowledgeable Pat fans, who would you rather have, Sean Merriman or Tully Bannacane, they will say Merriman. The Pats should win because of three things. One, Phillip Rivers. Drew Brees tore the Pats apart last year, and I don't think Rivers could do the same. The Pats, I think, will contain LT because if they don't, it's over. But they will keep him between the tackles, which will then force Rivers to beat us. I like our chances. Two, Lawrence Maroney. I think Maroney will help keep the Chargers unbalanced. Last two times the Pats played the Chargers, no running game to speak of. A good balanced offense, plus I think Brady will spread the Chargers out and pick them with dink and dunk passes, and then maybe an over-the-top pass to Chad Jackson. Okay, maybe not, but Lawrence Maroney will help balance out the offense, which we did not have the last two times. Again, I like our chances. Three, Marty Schottenheimer. Do I have to say more? Marty equals Herm Edwards. I like our chances. The Pats win 21-17.
That's ridiculously unfair to compare Marty Schottenheimer to Herm
Edwards.
Yeah, I
agree. Schottenheimer, I mean, he's had his struggles in the playoffs, but he's also had a bit of bad luck. And
he's been great in the regular season. Herm Edwards never accomplished anything like Marty Schottenheimer has.
Yeah, no, I agree. Schottenheimer is a much better coach than Herm Edwards. the thing for me with Schottenheimer is his most recent one, I think, was his worst, because I think he got it, and this is hard for me to say because he was playing Herm Edwards, but he had an absolute terrible, terrible game plan in that game against the Jets. He had it,
and he
right
still should have won the game if the guy makes
right,
a field goal.
But he slowed it down like the Jets wanted to when he had much more offensive talent.
Yeah, I agree.
And that was one of those games I think he should have won. The ones against Denver, the fumble there, you know, what are you going to do? 98-yard drive by Elway. That's why he's Elway. Those are tough.
I just want to do this as a point of comparison, okay? Drew Brees last year. Do you have Philip Rivers' numbers anywhere?
No, I do not.
Gary, can you get Philip Rivers' numbers, his final stats? I know him reasonably well off the top of my head, but just as a point of comparison, Brees threw for 3,576 yards last year, but he threw the ball 500 times. And I know that Rivers was in the 400, so there's a difference there. He completed 64% of his passes. I want to say Rivers completed 61%.
Yeah, it's in the low 60s.
Brees threw 24 touchdowns. Rivers threw 22. Brees threw 15 interceptions. Rivers only threw 9.
Mm-hmm.
Brees finished with an 89.2 passer rating. Brees was in the 90s, right? 92-something?
Mm-hmm.
So there's not really a whole lot. I mean, everybody seems to think that Drew Brees would pick them apart and Rivers can't. They've obviously been very similar with the same team.
Yeah.
Rivers.
3,388 yards, 61.7 completion percentage, 28 sacks, 22 touchdowns, 9 interceptions.
And Brees was sacked 27 times. So, you know, the numbers are very similar.
Yeah.
Very similar.
And they're 14-2.
Yeah, as opposed to 9-7 and out of the playoffs last year with Brees.
Yeah, I mean, don't
now
get...
now as a, just to, as a, I want to be consistent. The Chargers had an unbelievably ridiculously tough schedule last year. They had 4 trips, I want to say, to the East Coast, and it's a lot harder for a West Coast team to go to the East than it is for an East to go to the West because of the time change.
So yeah, you know, hey, Rivers is a smart guy. He did it in college. He's doing it in the pros. So don't underestimate him. I think he may struggle in his first start because he's playing a tough defense. But it also wouldn't surprise me if he had a good game. How's that for some Sean Salisbury being on the fence?
That's Brian Morey-like right there.
Andy in Sioux City. Hey, guys, I love the way the Pats played the Jets. They played with emotion and purpose. I hope they didn't use it all up because they need to do the same thing when they play the Chargers if the Patriots are to win. I think the Chargers are the best team in the NFL, but we all know the best team doesn't always win. See the 2001 Patriots. I really wish we would have had Harrison and Sayo on the field.
The best team doesn't win sometimes.
For this game. I think it would have helped keep the emotion in this game. The Patriots will need to play the best game of the year to advance.
Harrison might be there. Who knows?
Yeah.
I mean, I think it's a long shot, but let's not rule it out. Let's not rule it out unless Bill rules it out tomorrow. And we'll find out at 4 o'clock in the injury report because I'm pretty sure we're not going to find out before then. But
right.
I thought he was a little cryptic in that yesterday when he was talking about it in the press conference, Tom, saying, you know, we'll evaluate him. I think if he was definitively out, he might as well have just said it. If he planned on having him out on that injury report on Wednesday, now I'm not saying that he won't be out, but if he planned on having him out and he knew it, I think he would have just said it.
Yeah, I agree. Rob from Scottsdale, Arizona, he's going to the game. He says, a lifelong Pats fan since attending John Smith soccer camp. I am pumped to travel for the game to Qualcomm. Seats are upstairs, but I'm in the building and cautiously optimistic. Do you guys have any stats or opinions on Belichick's record against all-time running backs? Let's go, Pats. Well, one thing, Rob, is we've heard that San Diego could be a pretty rough place. So that's what the word is that the word is there's a lot of gang members that are scattered around through the seats, and you got to, you know, that's not like, you know, just getting in a fist fight. They'll kill you.
Are you being serious?
Yeah. You didn't hear that?
No.
You weren't here when we were talking about that?
No. Well, someone asked me about San Diego, because I went to San Diego as a fan, and that's probably the only place I've ever had a hard time with Patriots gear on, was San Diego.
Yeah,
back in 96.
Yeah, I heard that a lot of, you know, some gang members go, and there have been problems there with some gang members. And I guess when the Raiders go there, gangs from opposite sides attend the thing, and they've had a lot of problems. So, you know, just be careful. Just want to let you know that. Because there's, you know, there's something about fighting you got to realize. Some of the best fights are the ones you don't get into. I mean, I've gone to Buffalo with gear on, and they've gotten, you know, attacked. And I looked up, and I saw 10 guys, and I said... I'll just get my head stomped in. So I turned around and took it. You know, sometimes you just got to take it because you're at a disadvantage. So don't be stupid and try to start anything.
Right.
But, yeah, I mean, it should be a good game. I don't know why you fly in 6 hours. You want my ticket? I'd rather stay home, watch it on TV. boy, this is a long email.
Well, just, I mean, he wanted to know if we had any stats against...
I don't have
all the stats, but I can tell you that the two times that LaDainian Tomlinson has played against Belichick, he's been very successful. 217 yards back in 2002
yes.
and 134 last year.
In a game that amazingly went under when it was 21-14 early in the third quarter and nobody ever scored again.
Oh, that game in 2002?
Yeah.
that was a very funny game. That was a funny, funny game.
8 more points puts that game over.
Whew. Yeah, Brady threw a couple of uncharacteristic interceptions in the fourth quarter of that game.
Okay, this is Shannon. Now, this is Rednecks from Iowa. Is
Some more email crime.
Here we go. He goes, I roll into work today, still basking in the Pats' win on Sunday, and looking forward to listening to PFW in progress while enjoying a typical day of sending out blast emails to multiple high-profile DSMs and guiding mindless newspaper advertising reps to their next sale. Boy, was I wrong. Instead, a feeble attempt of a cut-down was sent my way by good old Sawyer from Bumble Bleep Waterloo, Iowa. First of all, Sawyer, the joke is on you. You live in Waterloo. I have been to Waterloo en route to many a Hawkeyes football game, and trust me, that's the stench that was in New York City the day before was more than likely from a mob of corn-picking idiots from Waterloo who came to see Letterman. The typical moron from Waterloo knows only 4 things. 1, how to properly stage a cow-tipping excursion. 2, how to tell Dixie Ann, the least fat girl in town with the best child-bearing hips, that she sure is pretty.
Oh, boy.
How to spell I don't even know what this says.
Dubuque.
How to spell Dubuque out loud in under 2 seconds after doing a beer bong full of Bush Light. And how to judge the hog competition at the yearly 4-H event. Sorry, Shannon, this is just, that sure is pretty, made me laugh. Good luck on all your pig crap shoveling at 4 o'clock in the morning and to finally pinning your sister at the family wrestling meet on the 4th of July this year, Sawyer. You'll need it.
Shannon came with it.
Oh, that was a good email. So, now Sawyer.
Balls in Sawyer's court.
Yep. This is,
that you're going to encourage that one.
We knew it was coming. We knew it was coming. Brian in Colorado, he said, I read that the Chiefs, believing that they would not make the playoffs, put Turley and one of their starting guards on injured reserve before the last game of the season to call up and protect 2 players they had on their practice squad. KC's O-line was not that great to begin with, so take away 2 starters and we saw the result. There was no way Green was going to have any time to pass. How were the average Chiefs receivers going to have time to get open? With Sanders in there to stop the run, the Chiefs offense didn't have a chance. Come on, you have to have noticed the look on Belichick's face when he encountered the ring of reporters around Mangini. I had to replay that off TiVo a couple of times. It was classic. I agree, if the Pats can keep it close, they have a good chance to win. San Diego has weak receivers, a rookie quarterback, and a susceptible secondary. Well, he's not a rookie, but he's a first-year starter.
And I think that any receiving corps that includes Antonio Gates is not weak, in my opinion, but that's just me.
The receivers are... Vincent Jackson has come on in the last month. He's caught 3 touchdowns. He's had 280-some yards receiving, and he's big. He's like a tight end in a receiver's body, 6'4", 241. So if he's matched up with Ellis Hobbs, that could be something that... Yeah.
Now, just as a point of comparison, okay? Keenan McCardle, Vincent Jackson, and Eric Parker. Okay, let's leave the tight ends out now. For argument's sake, we'll say he's talking about wide receivers being weak. Would you classify the Patriots wide receiver corps as weak?
Yes.
I bet you the emailer wouldn't.
That's true. I mean, you know, it's no weaker than the Patriots, obviously.
And they've been able to get by. They've been fine.
Gary, do you want me to read this?
I could send to my email. You can if you want. It's a little joke about Jets fans.
Okay, this is a joke on Jet fans. One foggy night, a Jets fan was heading north from New York, and a Pats fan was driving south from Boston. While crossing a narrow bridge, they hit each other head-on, mangling both cars. The Pats fan manages to climb out of his car and survive the damage. He looks at his twisted car and says, "Man, I'm lucky to be alive." Likewise, the Jet fan gets out of his car uninjured, he too feeling fortunate to have survived. The Jet fan walks over to the Pat fan and says, "Hey, man, I think this is a sign that we should put away our petty differences and live as friends instead of being rivals." The Pats fan thinks for a moment and says, "You know, you're absolutely right. We should be friends. In fact, I'm going to see if something else survived the wreck." The Pats fan then pops open his trunk and removes a full, undamaged bottle of Jack Daniels. He says to the Jets fan, "I think this is another sign we should toast to our newfound friendship." The Jets fan agrees and grabs the bottle. After sucking down half the bottle, he hands it back to the Pats fan and says, "Your turn." The Pats fan calmly twists the cap back on the bottle, throws the rest of the bottle over the bridge into the river and says, "Nah, I think I'll just wait for the cops to show up."
Oh my God, that is funny!
You all right over there?
It was all right.
It's nothing about you sure are pretty. That really cracked you up.
Yeah, that was a good one. Okay, Phil from Austin. My Phillip. Buddy Phil. He says, "Josh McDaniels took a lot of criticism from the fans, myself included, earlier this year, but he deserves a lot of credit for the success of the offense against the Jets. I hate the Jets, and losing to them would have been a huge disappointment. As long as they don't beat themselves against San Diego like they did Denver last year, I'll end the year feeling okay about this team and even better about next year." And that's Phil from Austin.
Yeah, I mean, I think there's a lot of reasons to feel pretty good about the future. Let's put it that way. I mean, they're at worst right now, as we just alluded, Tom, at worst, the fourth best team in football.
Right.
I would say probably third, because I think right now they're better than the Colts.
I agree.
But not only that, you have a good amount of cap space, guys that know how to deal with the cap, and two first-round picks, and guys that know how to use those picks. So, I mean, I think right now you have to feel really good about where the Patriots stand long-term.
Oh, yeah, definitely. If they can just keep a couple guys around, you know, maybe Banta, Kane, and Samuel, they'll be looking pretty good. Jeff in Vegas. "Hey, guys, I'm driving down to the game this weekend from Vegas and was planning on buying tickets right before the game starts, most likely from scalpers." Not that that's illegal or anything. "Does anyone know how hot of a ticket it is? They're going for about $700 to $800, I hear, right now. Also, will I be safe decked out in Pats garb? A Jets fan on WFAN yesterday said that he was pummeled by a Pats fan while leaving the game Sunday. He said a state trooper was right there but did nothing. I found this to be surprising since Gillette is known to have great security. I know that Chargers fans are typically docile, but they may be really jacked up for this game. Any thoughts?" Well, as I said, the Charger fans are known, it's not known as one of the biggest home field advantages, but as I heard, I guess when they have big games like this, there's some people there that you don't really want to mess with. So just be careful. I don't think that you'll get beat up for wearing Pat stuff, but just don't run your mouth.
I had a hard time there. It was nothing physical, but I was really, like Tom said, if you don't use your head and keep track of yourself and keep your mouth shut, I think you could get something
right.
Physical. And it also didn't hurt us that day. The Patriots won the game easily, and once it became apparent that the Patriots were pulling away, the Chargers fans shut up.
Right.
You know, and they started leaving. By the time, you know, the game was over quickly. It was like 28-7 at the half, and they ended up winning 45-7. And we all, by the time the game was over, we had made it behind the Patriots bench. There was so many empty seats. So that was kind of an abnormal situation. If you're going to go, I would kind of, you know, watch yourself. That's all. Because I've heard bad stories. And if Tom's talking about gang stuff, you don't want to get involved in any of that.
Right. And the other thing is that they're really confident. For, like, the fans are, you can't find a Chargers fan who thinks they're going to lose. There's not one Charger fan on earth.
Right.
So they're going to be all jacked up waiting for a murder. And if this game ends up being close, the fans are going to start getting annoyed too. So just keep that in mind too, that they're expecting a big win on Sunday. And, you know, just be careful, like Paul said.
And they are, I mean, they should be confident, just like all the Patriots fans think the Patriots are going to win. I mean, when you're a fan of the team, you should think they're going to win.
Right.
Fred in Montreal. Hi, guys. I was impressed by the Gators' defensive ends in last night's game. Well, you should have been, because when they don't get blocked, they're pretty tough. I mean, both those guys are good, but I don't know what Ohio State was doing. They were peeling in and not blocking them, and they were all over Troy Smith. I know nothing about college football, so could you give me your opinion on the possibility of them playing outside linebacker in the 3-4 scheme in the NFL? Both guys could. I know the coverage skills are the most difficult part of that transition, but please do your best. Yeah, and that's the thing. I mean, both those guys, rushing-wise, are tall, angular guys who could play that position, but as Bill always says, it's the hardest position to evaluate because of those things like the covering and things that you have to do in the NFL that you don't do in college.
Because even if you're going to be used in the pros as strictly a pass rusher, you know, as mostly a pass rusher, you still have to have some cover skills, because there are times where you have to be able to do something other than just rush the passer right. Every play.
I mean, even
to play in the Patriots system.
Even Merriman drops back sometimes. He's not always rushing the passer. In that Baltimore game on the touchdown that they won, he was in coverage on Todd Heap.
Made a terrible play, by the way.
So, yeah, so it's even he is out there covering sometimes, so you can't just rush the passer.
Right.
Alex in Somerville. The Chargers have a rare offense, with Tomlinson obviously in his prime, having an all-time best performance. The San Diego offense will move the ball on the Patriots' defense, as many teams have all season. The deciding point of the game will be whether the Patriots' top-ranked red zone defense can stop the Chargers' top-ranked red zone offense. If we can make Nate Keating the highest scorer on the Chargers' team this weekend, the Patriots will win. And
yeah.
I think that's a good point. I made that
point earlier. I mean, it's strength against strength. Tom speculated that San Diego was best, and we knew that they were the best in the goal-to-go situations from the Houston game when Bill talked about that. The only team that would like better than that would be San Diego.
Mm-hmm.
And the Patriots are second best to Baltimore in red zone defense. So it's strength against strength. And I just like the Cincinnati game, we were talking about it as we walked down here, Tom, to do the show. In Cincinnati, you know, the Bengals got the ball that day, went right down the field, carved right through the Patriots like butter, a knife through butter, and they had to kick a field goal. Got the ball back after a 3-and-out, did the same thing again, had to kick a field goal. So it was 6-0 instead of 14-0.
Right.
And the Patriots never had to change the way they played. Had it been 14-0, now, you know, you extrapolate that against San Diego and Merriman and Phillips and all these guys start, you know, rushing and not worrying about the passing game. And you get, even if it's midway through the second quarter and you're down 14 points, that's a big difference. That changes the way you play a little bit.
No, I agree. If they can hold them to field goals, that's going to be big. If Tomlinson or Gates can turn those into touchdowns, it's going to be a negative for the Patriots. That's going to be a good battle all game long. Don't be surprised to see the Chargers take some shots, maybe from the 25-30, with Gates down the middle or Jackson down the sidelines too, and not wait to get into that area, because the Patriots are awfully tough in that red zone area. We have an email from someone with no name. Who cares what anybody says about Bill versus Marty and Tom versus LaDainian? All I can say is that we are a month away from being one short of a full hand of rings. The best part is we, as Pats fans, know we are seeing greatness in front of our own eyes. Pats fans are not blind to the fact that we are seeing the best quarterback-coach combo of all time. I have one question. I know a dynasty is 3 rings in 4 or 5 years. What is it called when your team owns the decade? It's called Team of the Decade.
First of all, there's no such definition of that.
No.
But, you know, whatever.
But the Steelers were the team of the 70s, the Niners were the team of the 80s, the Cowboys were the team of the 90s.
And the Patriots will be the team of the...
Whatever.
Whatever you want to call it. The 2000s, I guess, would be the proper term.
El Giado. How do you say that, Gary?
El Giado.
He wants to talk about Asante Samuel. Regarding Asante Samuel, I think that the Pats are going to have to franchise him if they can't re-sign him to an extension. Unless they go after Nate Clements or another experienced corner, they can't go into next season with Ellis Hobbs and Chad Scott. Even if they draft somebody, they are probably not going to step right in and start right away. At least if you franchise Samuel, you have another year to see how good he really is, as well as get some playing time for a rookie. What other choice do they have?
I don't know. I like Samuel, and I think they need to keep him. You know, I don't think that they need to go out and break the bank and, you know, sign him at all costs. It's not Tom Brady here, but you know, I think that he's a pretty good player, and I think that they'd miss him. You made the point earlier, Tom, about the number one corner, and I just think that if you let him go, and then Ellis Hobbs is your number one guy, even if he pans out, okay, and he's your number one guy, well, then he establishes himself as your top guy after his third year. Well, how many years is he going to be around?
Right.
You know, four, five? You know, when's it? Did he sign a four-year deal or a five-year deal? I don't even know. You know, so at some point, you just got to keep the players that you have that are making plays for you, and Samuel's one of those. Since, like, the second half of last year, he has been a top-notch cornerback for them.
No, I agree, and it's like this emailer said, I don't know what they do. I agree with the emailer,
because I think at some point, you just have to hold on to somebody.
If you let Samuel go, like, you have to bring someone in from free agency. This isn't a big class. Listen, they're not going to pay that money for Nate Clements. He's the top corner on the market, which means he's going to get more than Samuel. So why not just keep Samuel if that's what you were going to do? Nate Clements is going to get a ton of money. So I would think they would just re-sign Samuel if that was their thinking. And, you know, you want a rookie corner to come in. I mean, look at the Chargers. That Cromartie, they like. He's had kind of an up-and-down rookie year, but it's awful tough for a rookie to just come in and start, especially in this system. It's complicated, and I don't know. I'm with you. I think they should re-sign Seattle.
And I think that they should also draft a cornerback high.
Yeah, I do too. They got to start addressing, you know, the secondary and the linebacking position at some point, and they have all these draft picks. They have all this money. This would be the year to do it. Now, let me ask you. Don't you think that a college is a little outdated by having the rushing numbers taken off the passing?
Oh, God, that's ridiculous.
They did that because of the option, when everybody ran the option and the quarterback would, you know, lose 10 yards.
The thing is that they call a sack a run, and it's not. It should come off the net passing yards,
Right.
Not an individual.
I know that's why they did it, was because people used to run the option all the time, blah, blah, blah.
But if they run an option now, that's a rush.
Right.
So it should be considered that. I mean, when a quarterback has a designed running play, that's a run. You should be able to determine whether or not the quarterback drops back to pass, looks around, and then decides to run.
Yeah, that's
so if he gets stopped behind the line, that's a sack.
Brian from Colorado is back in. He says, no, I do not consider the Pats wide receivers to be the strength of the team, but that does not make the Chargers wide receivers any better. When Denver plays
They're not any better. That's my point.
He says, when Denver plays the Chargers, they generally put Bailey on Gates. I was just trying to point out that it will be easier to contain the receivers than it will the running game. It's not like they are playing against the Colts offense where they have to scheme more against the pass than the run. If they contain LT as a runner and a receiver, they have a good chance to win. Well, we definitely agree with that.
I agree. If LaDainian Tomlinson is contained, I think the Patriots have a great chance to win.
But just don't – I mean, Vincent Jackson is in his second year. He's a guy they drafted in the second round, I believe, last year, and they really liked. And just looking at his numbers the last four or five games, he's really starting to come on. And there's always those guys in the playoffs who kind of people don't really know a lot about, and then they kind of make their name for themselves. Just keep an eye on him, because a lot of people liked him coming out of the draft. I know Kuiper liked him, and so watch out for Jackson, especially if he's on Hobbs, because that's a huge size advantage that he'll have, especially on those jump balls and those corner routes.
And I also didn't compare the receiving corps by saying that they were the strength of the team. I said, I agree that San Diego's are weak, but what would you consider the Patriots? I didn't say you would consider the Patriots the strength, but I'm guessing that Patriots listeners wouldn't say that they were weak. Their own receiving core was weak, because they don't say anything is weak about the Patriots.
Right.
That's all the point I was trying to make. And I do agree, Tom, if LaDainian Tomlinson is contained, the Patriots, that's a huge plus for the Patriots.
Right. And just as we're out of emails, Wayne from Jacksonville calls in. What's up, Wayne?
Hey, guys. How you doing today?
Good.
Hey, Wayne.
Good, good. Looking forward to this weekend.
Should be a great one.
This weekend. It's awesome.
Should be a great one.
Yeah. You know, we talk a little bit about our receivers, but, you know, I see them coming along pretty good each week. I don't know.
But well, they're definitely better now than they were a month or so ago.
And that's what everybody says. It's going to take time. With what happened, you can't expect it not to take a little time. So, I don't know. I think they're doing a good enough job to open up some other people to play a little bit better, and I just think they're spreading it out pretty good. That's just my opinion, but
that's what they do.
Yeah,
that's
and Chad Jackson, you know, he didn't have a great game last weekend, but the one throw that he did get, and everybody keep, you know, I don't think that that was his fault. I didn't think the throw was very good. I thought he defended it more than letting it get picked off because I thought it was a picked-off ball when it got out of his arms.
The only point, well, it should have been an interception. Yeah, you're right. But the only thing is that he wasn't open. And we've been told that this guy is such a dynamic player. And we're waiting to see him get open, and he hasn't been.
I don't think he did anything wrong on that play.
He just wasn't open.
Okay. Well, I thought a lot of people were saying, you know, hey, you know, he didn't do – well, he did what he was supposed to do on that ball. He didn't let it get intercepted, which is half the battle.
I agree.
Getting open, well, he's
matter of fact, all three of us, I think, at that time, when he made that play, we all said he did a good job of making sure it wasn't intercepted.
And definitely he has not done anything close to what we were hoping he was going to get done in his rookie year, but that's the chance you take with a rookie, right?
Well, yeah.
I mean, I think we need one more season before we can really
make a call.
Yeah, if he's got 27, 28 catches at this point next year, we can start saying bust.
Yeah.
You know what I mean? Because he should have around the 40, 50 catch mark next year if he makes that jump.
He's got to develop that football speed that you keep talking about. Because if he doesn't, then he's not going to get the separation that we're looking for.
No, I agree.
It's never going to happen.
I agree.
So who do you like in this game, Wayne?
Who do I like in this game? I'm a Pats fan, so I got to go Pats, but I ain't going to tell you it's going to be a walk away. I'm going to tell you that if they do a good job and they still lose or win, I'm hoping they're going to win. I think it's just like anything else. You got to deal with your main threats and you got to honor all the threats on the field. I'm wanting to see them win, but if they don't win, but they play a hard game and, you know, they lose by a touchdown or a field goal, then I think it was a good season because they're playing a very good team. That's just the end of it. And if we lose against a very good team, well, as long as it wasn't the Jets, I'm a happy camper. But I say they're going to win. I say it's going to be tight. It within 7 points, maybe a field goal. And I think it's a good test for them. If they get through this, then I think Baltimore is going to have their hands full. They're going to have to look pretty hard at us.
All right, Wayne. Well, thanks a lot. We appreciate the call. Take care. And you know the one thing I was thinking of last night, Paul, was that if you beat up on Texas, it really doesn't mean anything these days. You know what I'm saying? I mean, Ohio State whoops Texas, and everyone thinks they're a good football team. But bottom line was Texas sucks.
Where's he going with this one?
I had a feeling.
Is he leaning into me? Is that what he's doing?
John Rook is here, ladies and gentlemen.
That's very, very good radio segue material, Tom Gasella.
After a surprisingly one-sided national championship game.
I think I was surprised like everybody else. Weren't you? Come on.
I was sitting there. I wouldn't have been surprised if Florida won the game. I thought Ohio State was going to win. But
I was sitting there looking at the score.
I was in total shock. I said, I cannot believe what I'm watching right now.
Did you not get a chance to watch the game?
Yeah.
Oh,
no, I said when I was sitting there looking up at the score saying, I can't believe what's going on right now. They can't even get a snap off.
I couldn't either.
You know what disappointed me? What? And this is just for me personally. I don't know if you guys felt the same or if anybody else was affected by it, but how little I really was interested in it once the game actually came. Because the playoffs started. The NFL playoffs have started.
I totally agree with that.
And now I just didn't have any time for that game last night.
I totally agree.
I made the comment to Andy that I almost don't even want to start watching the game because I don't want to get emotionally involved.
I want to get back, dive back into college football now that you're on the pro football
team. And when you start watching it, now you have an interest in it. You know, I kind of watched the first quarter and a half flicking back and forth to regular sitcom shows.
And
not really watching it. And then it was 34-14 at the half, and I saw no reason to watch the second half.
I know. Part of the problem, obviously, is the fact that Ohio State had to wait 7 weeks between games. I mean, that's ridiculous. Do I think it was a factor in last night? I absolutely believe it was a factor.
I don't think it decided the game. But
no, it did not. I have to give a tremendous amount of credit to Florida. I think we realize, number one, how fast they really are on defense. They got tremendous athletes.
Great defense.
And number two, they know how to play football in the SEC. That is by far and away was the best league in the country this year, and there's nobody
Not even close.
I agree with you. I made the comment to Tom that I was really disappointed with myself because I picked Ohio State to win.
I did too. I did too, Paul. I have to admit.
But I did that despite saying all year that, in my opinion, the people that were saying that Ohio State and Michigan should have a rematch, I was saying, I just don't think the Big Ten is very good.
Well, I was never for the rematch either. I never thought that.
But I felt like, you know, that if it was LSU and Florida, I wouldn't have been against it.
Well, here's the thing.
Because I felt like those two, I think the SEC was good. I thought the Big Ten, I think that once you got beyond those two teams and perhaps Wisconsin, perhaps, although they got thoroughly dominated by Arkansas in the bowl game that they won.
Yeah, barely. Yeah.
I thought the rest of the league was a bunch of also-rans this year.
Was really,
you know, Iowa, Minnesota, Penn State, right. Northwestern, Purdue.
It's weird how you think, because I liked Ohio State, but I thought USC would destroy Michigan because I thought they were the much better team. And I see that happen.
I saw the Michigan game happen, like Tom just said, and I still didn't change my pick.
The irony of all of this is that Florida doesn't even get in to play that game unless UCLA knocks off.
That's
Southern
why
Cal.
We need a playoff.
Right. I mean that's how unbelievably ironic this whole thing is.
They were talking about. They probably won't do anything in terms of changing it until 2010.
They can't.
Because of the Fox situation.
There's a contractual obligation right now, and Fox controls it all.
Yeah, you know, listening to Mike and Mike in the morning this morning, and they were talking about this, and they were saying even if they do put something in place at that juncture, after 2010, it would be an end one situation where you'd
That's
have.
That's exactly what
so
will
you,
happen.
So you're dealing with the four. You're still leaving one out.
You're looking at a 14.
I mean, not even to mention Boise State, by the way.
Well, that's how this whole plus one situation where you would actually take the four top-seeded teams and place them in two of the four BCS games, and then you would play them off in a championship, in other words, a one extra game, a plus one game. That's how there's a flaw in the system. If you put the plus one system into place this year, Boise State gets left out. But somebody else gets left out, John.
Because
I understand that.
It's Ohio State, Michigan, LSU, USC, and Florida. One of those five teams gets left
you're
out.
You're absolutely right. But Boise State's the one that deserves to go because they're the only other team.
And let me tell
team.
You what the NCAA is missing out on. You get a team like Boise State, say their first round playoff game is against Oklahoma, and they have that game. Mm-hmm. Now you got the entire country rooting for Boise State.
Sure.
You know what I mean?
Sure.
If they were going to play again, you know how many Boise State fans were born that night? You get a team like that, play
thousands.
A game like that,
thousands.
And they continue on. Maybe they lose their next game.
Maybe they lose by 50 in the next game.
But your television ratings go through the roof. And I don't know.
So they're missing out on that.
Tom's missing out on? I don't understand why they don't go to it for money purposes, because I feel that if you did that, you would only make more money.
Well, you
That's
could.
What I don't
but
get.
Here's the problem, guys, and I've maintained this from day one. I will also maintain this from here on out, that there is no way that we will ever have what everybody wants, and that is a true playoff system in Division 1A, or now the bowl, whatever the hell they call it, and, you know, the subdivision now. The reason that we won't have it is because of the money that is generated all over the country with all the individual bowl games in those individual communities, and the coaches, along with their athletic directors. Now, let me keep in mind here, the athletic directors have sold their presidents of the respective institutions on this. So you're talking about you're three layers deep on this one, all right? They like the fact now that even there's 32 bowl games. I think we all agree that's probably about 10 too many. But there's 32 postseason games. They like the fact now that 32 teams can end the season winners. And it gives them momentum for next
year. But
they
can't they keep those bowl games
season,
going?
Let me finish. They keep those. They keep the season ticket sales going. They keep the marketing programs going, which brings money into their coffers, which keeps other sports programs alive for that much longer in those particular institutions. Now, because of that, you also add to the fact that you have all of the other, you have all of the ancillary things that go on in the individual communities that host these games. You have ESPN or Fox, which are very happy because they get decent television ratings for the time period. And plus, I cannot underscore this enough. Division 1A, or bowl subdivision now, as they call it, is full of nothing but old school guys. Okay, it's always been this way. It will always be that way. It will never change unless, I just don't see a scenario where or when it will change because of the money involved. Now, yes, Tom, they could make money doing exactly what you are talking about, but it still pales in comparison to the money that is currently generated now. Because what you're doing is you're taking your scenario, right, and you're talking about what? Maybe 8 games, 16 teams, or maybe 4 games, 8 teams, right? Okay, you're still taking that and still quadrupling it because you've got 32 winning teams right now that are going to win postseason games. So all I'm saying here is that it's a great idea, and I think at least the plus one model, when it does go into effect in 2010, and I do believe it will, I'm afraid that that's as good as it is ever going to get in bowl subdivision Division 1A football.
Yeah, I think you're probably right, but isn't there an argument to be made that whatever amount of those bowls that you deem,
yep,
you said there's 10, probably 10 too many?
Probably.
Well, leave those all the same.
But then now what you're doing is you're putting, I realize this sounds
they're
silly.
Not going to be any less significant.
Okay.
So don't make that argument.
Yeah, well, yes.
They can't get less significant than they are. No one watches them now.
I don't disagree. I don't disagree with that premise. However, in their own minds, in those 10 or so bowl games' minds, they are on a par with all of the other bowl games because they are a bowl game, period.
That's in their minds only.
Well, then, in this particular instance, Paul, I will argue this till the end of the earth here. Perception is reality in college football. It's warped. It doesn't make a lot of sense. There is no common sense, in fact. But perception is reality for the Emerald Bowl and for the Houston Bowl and for the Chick-fil-A Bowl. That's just the way it is. And it's not going to change. If you make those bowls decided subclass bowls, the interest not only in the communities but within the teams that are playing themselves and the conference partners in which these bowl games have automatically takes a nosedive on the stock market.
Well, we better get upstairs before Fred gives us a whooping.
Fred's going to get mad.
We're dawdling.
We have a huge announcement to make here.
Excellent.
How long are we going here?
Guess what?
What?
Podcast. Patriots Playbook is now going to be podcast. Yes.
Wow.
How about that?
So you're more than 4,000 votes short.
Right. You're kind of like the NFC to our AFC. You're kind of like the Big Ten to us being the SEC.
That's right.
Congratulations,
John.
Put me, I guess, on a par of the Big 12.
The Big 12 podcast coming your way soon with John Rook. Take care, everyone. With John.